Talk Live. It's talk radio that you control. And 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Colin.
And Jay Noon.
And you guys had been gone in Mexico together. Was it a romantic getaway, or what were you guys doing there?
It wasn't really that romantic for me and my wife, because we brought Colin. But no, I'm only kidding. We didn't have any time for romance, the wife and I, for sure, because we brought the kids and we were just really busy. And, you know, it was a really, really good time. In a nutshell, Anarchapulco is essentially Pork Fest without the riffraff.
Oh.
So
I was there. What are you talking about?
You're not a riffraff, Colin.
He is the Pork Fest riffraff.
I don't think so. the thing with Colin is people don't, you know, he likes to point out the riffraff and he expose them, and then they cry and go get a little nutty and get all upset. But generally the people he's pointing out are the ones who are really, you know, who've been getting their dopamine hits from creating drama online anyways. But anyways, back to Anarchapulco. So an interesting thing about Anarchapulco was at this place called the Secret Garden, which is like, I don't know, probably the area that we were in, I would say it's like a 6 or 7 acre campus. That had a bunch of like beautiful stonework there. It was pretty, you know, tore up by the hurricane. But they do a lot of like all kinds of it's like a healing place. It's like sort of the Secret Garden's like when you first walk in, you know, the Reiki symbol, like all the people that are into Reiki have that Reiki tattoo. My wife even has a tattoo on her back. I don't even know what it's called, but like that's like when you first walk into the place, there's that symbol. Maybe somebody call in and
I don't know, is it Om or something?
Right. Yes.
Oh, it is.
I believe that's what it is. Yeah. So, and then you walk around there and there's all kinds of like, it's basically like a healing place. It's owned by a doctor, who I believe he's a holistic doctor, Dr. Carlos. I talked with him several times. Great guy. And he had a really excellent staff there. The staff was really, really good. Bunch of, just a Mexican, like men in general. I really enjoyed like their attitude, especially towards my kids, because in the U.S., like most men like don't give like kids like a smile. I've noticed they're not like what a lot of them will do with like kids, like especially my kids who are like, you know, unvaccinated, so they're really healthy and they're like, you know, they're full of energy all the time and they're all charged up and they're, you know, getting into stuff and they're running around and they're just, you know, they're unstoppable. You know, they're 2.5 and 4. And so like men in the U.S., and there's a lot of them that just aren't fathers, best I can tell, but like they'll more like be kind of annoyed, you know, that there's a kid making noise or kid being a kid. But like the Mexican men, whether they were like, you know, in their young 20s or maybe, you know, late teens, right up to old men, were like really, really friendly to my kids. Like they would smile at them. They would say hi to them. A lot of times I'd have cash on my shoulders walking around. You know, he's 2.5 years old and we're walking a lot down there. We put on a lot of, we just walked a lot. And Cash, he just can't keep up with us. He's so little. So it wears him out, you know.
Aww.
And so he'd walk on my shoulders a lot of the time. And then in Cyprus, she'll walk pretty good. And Shannon would carry her a bunch. But he'd be on my shoulders and, like, just walking, like, random, like, you know, Mexican men would, you know, give Cash a fist bump, you know, give him a high five. And, you know, they would say something in Spanish that, you know, sounded nice and polite. I don't even know what they were saying, with a smile. So the culture when it comes to families, definitely in, you know, with the people down there in Acapulco is very, very strong. And I felt that.
I'm always telling whenever there's like a bunch of conservatives on the internet saying like, we need to close the borders because these Mexicans, I'm always saying like, they are more family valuing Christian than you guys.
So I worked with a fella down there. His name's Oscar. He was one of the employees for the Secret Garden. Well, anyways, back to the Secret Garden a little bit. So the Secret Garden is sort of like a holistic / spiritual like healing thing. So there's like a lot of like yogi mentality, a lot of like Ram Dass influence with, you know, some of the structure and the art. don't know if you guys know who Ram Dass is.
He's like a Buddhist guy.
So, yeah, something. And I'm just paraphrasing my wife. She knows more. She really appreciated like a lot of what was down there because, you know, she's sort of been in that, you know, realm, you know,
massage therapist.
So she's been a massage therapist her entire career. And she's very much into that like spiritual, you know, connection to Mother Gaia kind of things. And
well, before we get into more of Anarchapulco, we do have a caller on the line. Unscreened caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
Well, I tell you, former Attorney General Kelly Ayotte is endorsing Donald Trump for president. She's a Republican for U.S. Senator, and she ran for U.S. Senate, and now she's running for governor, but she was the Attorney General. And so, you know, here you have this guy, candidate who swindled students at so-called Trump University, defrauded New York banks, stole secret documents, solicited a felony from the Georgia Secretary of State, and incited an insurrection. So I guess, you know, he earned the endorsement of a Republican former attorney general.
He incited what?
An insurrection.
Oh, okay.
The attack on the January 6, 2021. I mispronounced it by blunder, but I didn't mean to. New Hampshire's former attorney general, Kelly Ayotte, says, well, I guess he'd be perfect.
What evidence do you rely on that Trump incited an insurrection? Because I've heard that talking point from a whole bunch of these mentally ill libtard leftists constantly. And I've listened to his speech and he didn't say anything about doing violence, aggressing towards people. He was, you know, from what I could tell, he was like, you know, be peaceful, you know, and even like Owen Schroyer, who is an InfoWars journalist, you know, did like 60 days in jail over this January 6th thing. And he wasn't even there. He was just like reporting on it. Like this idea that's an insurrection is absolute mental illness on the part of these, you know, libtard left that have, you know, which is a whole bunch of people that best I can tell that they have been in institutionalized government controlled education programs their entire brain development years.
They don't even know how to think about these things. I was talking with a family member and they were like, oh, well, you know, Trump and all this stuff with, you know, the legal stuff that's going on right now and how he, you know, misvalued whatever Mar-a-Lago. And I was just like, come on. You know this kind of thing, like in business with the valuation of properties, that goes on all the time. The only reason they're going after him is because he's, you know, run for office and been president and all of that sort of stuff. And then I went further and I said something about, what was it? How can you even determine what the proper value of something is? Like, people list houses all the time and then they sell for a different price. And the bank has their own due diligence. Anyways, I don't, we don't need to go off too much over tangent. But the point is, like, those are the questions that naturally come to my mind when I hear about something. I'm like, how did that even happen? A lot of times you hear a story and you just know from the get-go it's bunk when you hear, like, just some of the details, like the Josie Smollett thing, you know, where he claimed that, you know, he was attacked by Trump supporters. And it's just like in downtown Chicago, it's like, yeah, that's the hotbed of Trump supporters.
Mm. So yeah. What evidence do you rely on? Is your name Tom, caller? Tom?
Yeah, I'm Tom. And, there's the first of all, he was talking to the some of these organizers beforehand. This wasn't just something spur of the moment. These people were going down there planning this attack on the Capitol. They came down there. They had it all figured out where they were going to go.
Like Ray Epps, right?
And,
Ray Epps was one of the organizers. And, you know about him?
Who?
Ray Epps. He's
okay,
on videos.
Go on.
He's on video saying, "Let's go in there. Let's go in there now. Let's storm the Capitol." You know, he wasn't arrested or anything. They finally, after it was a whole bunch of pressure to do something to him, they did do something to him.
But I thought they found out he was an FBI agent.
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
he was. And as he was saying that, "Let's storm the Capitol," all the people around him said, "Hey, this guy's a Fed," and they were calling him out. But you know, I've got another question for you, if you don't mind. You live in New Hampshire, right? Do you live in one of the rural areas? Do you have, you know, friends who have farms and stuff like that?
I don't have friends that have farms. No.
Okay.
Suburban.
Oh, okay.
Suburban.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm just thinking, I'm like, you know, if they had planned to, like, actually overthrow the government that day, there would have been a lot more guns there. And I don't think there was a single gun in Washington, D.C. that day, other than the ones that the Capitol Police used on some of the, let's call them protesters, but whatever.
Yeah, the one that was used to kill Ashley Babbitt.
Well, I think that your main point here, Tom, is just that Trump isn't like some kind of a good guy. He sucks. And this lady, Kelly Ayotte, is now simping for him. And
she sucks, too.
She sucks.
When
yeah,
she was Attorney General, she didn't do anything about the child trafficking rapist at DCYF. And it was reported to her many, many times of all kinds of stuff going on. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on Twitter about how when she was Attorney General that she was giving clear evidence of how to, like, you know, what's going on with DCYF and other government agencies and with the child trafficking. And also she was a lot of this, you know, these things with the Sununu DCYF house, the juvenile detention center, where all those kids were being, you know, raped and sodomized and told to fight each other and they were being beat and, you know, all this stuff, horrible things that were going on there. She didn't do anything about that either. And she was informed about it.
That's the party of law and order. That's the party of law and order for you, you know?
Whether they're Demopublicans or Republicrats, it's two different wings of the same bird. You know, I really think all this stuff with Trump is purposeful. I believe that this is part of the, you know, the circus, part of the WWF programming that the government is doing, that this, you know, is happening. Every time they bring an indictment against Trump, Trump's base gets stronger and stronger. And what's happening is because this stuff is so, anybody who's got two brain cells to rub together, who understands what's going on, these attacks on Trump are so, you know, unfounded, so blatant, and it is 100%, you know, weaponizing of, you know, the DOJ, the FBI, to attack political opponents. And it's happening here in New Hampshire, too. Like, you know, free staters are definitely getting attacked. Anybody who's pro-libertarian, and basically anybody who's against the whole mental illness, you know, leftist libtard narrative is one way or another is getting attacked. And we have many, many examples of this. And I believe that this is a setup for a hard, hard pendulum swing to the right. Because a whole bunch of Democrats are even getting fed up with, like, Joe Biden. They understand that Joe Biden, for example, is, you know, he's a straight up pedophile. Yeah, you know, his daughter, you know, put that in her diary. You know, you see all the stuff with all of the nonsense and all of the things with his son that they've been able to get away with. And the guy can't even put frame a sentence. You know, my 2-year-old son, you can have a better conversation with him than you can with Joe Biden. Seriously.
The reason they're not getting an education is because they're forced to go to public school and people are forced to pay school taxes. And you got cops running around enforcing these things. So remember, it's all the fault of cops.
No, it's not all fault of cops. Cops are just pawns in a rich man's war against the people. So what I could tell you, like, you know,
I like to blame the people who pay the taxes that fund the system, but
ultimately, cops are the ones who are doing the actions to put things in place.
Yes and no. I tell you, I have had a lot of police interactions. 90% of the police interactions I have had have been positive.
Okay, well, 90% of the police interactions our friend Shiloh,
who got, you know, is a pregnant woman, who got, you know, her window busted out of her car.
Whoa!
The other day and got dragged out of the car.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, she got arrested two nights ago.
I knew she got arrested for, like, not having a driver's license, but I didn't know any details what you're saying.
Yeah, she got they busted the window and they violently dragged her out of the car.
Oh,
this
my
cop.
God.
And she's pregnant.
Yeah.
And she informed the cops she was pregnant. And but anyways, there are definitely some psychopath cops and there are some good cops. But it kind of depends on, you know, what the mindset of this cop is. I mean, right now we have two different cultures in America. We have urban liberal type culture, where for generations, most of the city urban liberal type people have been basically on welfare.
I'm here to represent
that. You know, Jay,
that.
I've seen cops in rural areas do those same sorts of things. So.
But yeah, I'm just saying, but most of the cops I've dealt with in city areas and rural areas have been actually really good to me.
Well, let me just point out how hit and miss it is. Because, you know, you're in Hitaker,
yep.
And Ware, the next town over, right. They are out of control of that town.
Yep.
I've always
they
heard
have
that,
been,
yeah.
They have been. They still are. Like, mm-hmm. you hear on the radio, if you have, like, one of those scanners, they'll just go on these sprees and just pull people over. And I'll see it. Like, the first time I see a car pulled over, if I'm driving, because I have to drive through there a lot, I'll be like, okay, they're doing that again. So, you know, it's going to be like this for, like, a day or two, where they're just harassing everybody
yep.
for the crime of being on the public road, essentially. But they never do that in Hitaker, so
But the real problem is I really think the problem now is the internet and, of course, academia. So especially for, like, you know, if you start looking at, like, the IQ levels of the culture of the city urban liberal type versus basically rural America, you know, and a lot of the white supremacists, you know, that are floating around Twitter and stuff, they want to say that, you know, like, Black people have a lower IQ than white people. I don't think that is an accurate statement. I think that the people who have been fifth generation welfare recipients living in these cities have a lower IQ than the people who haven't been living in cities, because the cities are polluted, the air is damaged. When a welfare mom, you know, has a baby, you know, it isn't likely that she's eating organic food and taking care of herself. She's, you know, consuming fluoridated water, or she's
seed oils in the formula.
One of my friends is actually a big cheese in a regional a supermarket here in the Northeast. I'm not going to say the name. And she told me that they have all the data on the kind of foods that the people with using EBT cards are buying. So they know how old the people are. They know basically how many kids they're feeding, because they have, like, an app that, like, you can get points, and, like, if you know, and then you can, you know, put for each kid, you know, what kind of food they want. So what they're doing is, so a lot of these welfare moms, for example, and you just walk around.
That's the beginnings of the CBDC, right?
Right. Yeah, just walk around on the 5th of the month in Manchester. There's a market basket right downtown Manchester.
Hmm.
And you see so the woman that's buying food for her kids has, you know, a several hundred dollar hairdo. Hmm. She has, you know, $1,000 iPhone. She has a couple hundred dollar nail, you know, whatever, when you get your nails done, right? She's got
nails did,
whatever. And so what she has to do is she has to buy the maximum amount of calories, you know, versus dollars. So what is her shopping cart full of? All kinds of sodas, because sodas are cheap. All kinds of, you know, like, sugary, you know, cereals and junk food.
They probably
and,
say, oh, my kids only drink and, soda, too. You know, yeah, I'm drinking soda now, but it's the Mexican kind, so it's fine.
The multiple packs of zebra cakes, all this, everything that's made with
that
all,
was my favorite.
Everything that's made with all the government-subsidized stuff, like the canola oil, the cotton seed oil, the, you know, the high-fructose corn syrup, even the sugar. And when it says sugar, it's from beets. And sugar beets are sprayed with a lot of Roundup and all kinds of other, you know, fungicides and chemicals and, you
yeah,
know,
see,
stuff.
That's what I want to do next, is just, like, get really good quality, like, organic sugar. Because
it's,
like,
called maple syrup.
I love maple syrup, but there you go. It doesn't work for everything I need sugar for.
But anyways, so, and Jordan Peterson talks about, and I put a lot of study into, you know, how not to screw up your kids. My Anarcho-Polco presentation was how not to F up your children.
I got a
standing ovation for it. It
nice.
Was, yeah, I couldn't believe how much positive response I got from it. Anyways, so when children are born, the day a baby's born, he pretty much has his maximum IQ right then and there. And it is very, very challenging to increase IQ in a child. But it is relatively easy to reduce the IQ of a child. And the way that you can easily reduce the IQ of a child is basically feed it a whole bunch of junk food. So the welfare moms are being told, oh, don't breastfeed. Here is this stuff that they call Similac or Enfamil, which is basically breast milk flavored Coca-Cola, if you start looking at the ingredients on it. And so that doesn't build a strong brain. So they're feeding the kids formula. They're feeding them all kinds of government subsidized junk food that they're buying, you know, in the cities, and, you know, versus, you know, the earthy, crunchy, you know, mom that, you know, has the means and has a good supportive husband and, you know, isn't on the welfare. Like, I could tell you, my wife, she's, like, only buying organic things. for the most part. And all summer long, we're not even buying any produce because we grow it all. And, you know, we haven't bought meat in like 3 or 4 years because we raise all our meat. Hmm. And, you know, I'm pretty, you know, anal about what I feed the livestock. I feed them basically stuff that I can confirm has no pesticides on it, no herbicides on it. Definitely, I've had some of my grains and stuff tested for glyphosate. So what's happening is the people in the cities, they have been getting their IQs diminished right from the start just because of the environmental poisons and the diet that a lot of these city urban liberal types are feeding. And not all city urban liberal types are actually on welfare. But a lot of them are of the parasite class. There isn't too many non-parasite people that are, you know, working careers that are living in a city.
It's just the poorer ones, because the wealthier ones can go to like a Whole Foods or places like that.
Whole Foods is just a bunch of crap that is just put in different packaging.
Joe's. I mean, the vegetables are probably fine, I would imagine, there, or better.
Probably just like pesticide spray too.
Yeah, there's a lot of greenwashing going on with Whole Foods. Okay. But the thing is, like when it comes to whatever you're consuming for food, you know, we should only be, you know, eating what our great grandparents were eating. And most of our great, the grocery stores the way they are today didn't exist until the 70s.
I hate to tell you, my great grandparents were cannibals, so that's
okay. but except for Colin's great grandparents, but you know, 100 years ago, there was no grocery stores there, and pretty much everybody knew the guy that produced their food. And when you're living in a city, it was a farmer's market everybody went to buy their food. And it was farmers that came in from the country into the city that brought it in there. It wasn't like all these grocery stores and stuff like there is now.
What do you think the root cause of all the craziness that the clown show we see on the news every day? What do you think the root cause of that is? 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. 603-283-6160.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash, digital cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Rising fees have made Bitcoin useless for purchases, but Dash continues to have fees less than 1 cent per transaction, and its features ensure Dash is undefeated as the most useful cryptocurrency in the marketplace. From a technical standpoint, Dash transactions are irreversible, and its network is protected from 51% attacks by their Chainlocks technology. There's no need to wait for a confirmation before considering a Dash transaction complete, so it's great for merchants. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
It's Free Talk Live, talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the number you can call. That's 603-283-6160. Are you tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? Well, Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. You can live your life on Dash with bitrefill.com, where you can buy gift cards from big retailers, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org. And with you in the studio tonight on Free Talk Live, you've got me, Bonnie,
Colin,
and Jay Noon.
And we do have someone on the line. We have Danny calling from, I think, Mexico. Danny, what's on your mind?
Oh, I guess, yeah, Jay reached out to me and said to call in. I'm calling from Chiapas and down here working on a project.
Yeah, you work on a lot of projects, don't you, Danny?
Yeah, Yeah. It
like
keeps
building?
Me busy.
Yeah, Danny's been a contractor.
Yeah, building, blockchains, all kinds of good stuff. I work alongside of a couple of free staters, actually, with guys who work with Hush that built the tools that help us build Dragon X and the new crypto Tumen, which is a physical Mexican currency that a bunch of anarchist Mexicans got together, fought the government off, and started their own currency. And it's a paper currency that's been going for almost as long as Bitcoin.
Wow.
And when I met them a couple of years ago, I said, well, why aren't you digital? And they said, we don't know how. So, you know, the guys at Hush helped me put something together for them, and they have a blockchain now. So I'm here teaching them how to use it and helping them to get a marketplace going.
Did you say it's Cumin? It's Cumin?
Tumen.
Tumen is it backed by anything?
It's a Nahuatl word.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, it's backed by the community. It's it's an indigenous word that means money. Hmm. And basically, it's not backed by debt. It's backed by the goods and services of the community. So there's 6 different regions in Mexico that are using this right now, over 3,000 users. And basically, you have to accept 10% of your purchase in Tumen to become part of the Tumen community. So it's sort of like a reward point that just drives business. It's building a circular economy.
That's pretty cool.
There's a lot on YouTube about it. It's a really interesting story. And when it started in a university, and then it started kind of bled out into this little town called Espinal in Veracruz. And when the Bank of Mexico heard about it, they decided to sue them, saying that it was counterfeit. So they did a little bit of legal studies and found out that there were protections under the Mexican Constitution that allowed for indigenous rules and economies, and they were able to beat them.
Nice.
And when that happened, the TV and radio got a hold of it, and you know, people around Mexico started hearing about it, so it became popular in more and more areas.
That's so cool. It's kind of like the Liberty Dollar, yeah, but without getting completely destroyed by the feds.
Right, yeah.
Well, this sounds like the bank tried. But see, in the United States, the bankers have this kneecap alignment agency called the FBI that,
right,
you know, protects their interests. And it sounds like the Bank of Mexico actually had to go do a lawsuit, like it was like, you know, some kind of like, you know, regular business would have to go try to do a lawsuit if somebody was trying to, you know, if they wanted to straighten somebody out. But it's good that the Bank of Mexico didn't prevail there.
That's really awesome. That's a really cool thing to hear about. And I'm glad that you got them set up with a blockchain on there.
Yeah, and it's a Zcash fork. So they're they weren't even looking for privacy, but they got it anyway. So
nice.
So Danny, the reason I wanted you to call in is cuz I wanted you to tell I'm trying to pimp out Anarchapulco here while I'm on the air at Free Talk Live. Because it was a great event. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I'd like to see it not cost, you know, Jeff Berwick $50,000 out of his pocket, first off. I want to encourage people to buy the replays. And I'd like them to use my affiliate code, which is JAY at anarchapulco.com tickets. And so, Danny, what was your, did you get to watch any presentations while you were there? Because I know you were pretty busy.
I watched yours, and I watched Curtis Stone's, which was really interesting.
Yep.
He's the regenerative farmer. And there was a couple of others. I definitely avoided the flat earth as much as I could. And of course, Crypto Day. I was MC for Crypto Day, so I, kind of had to watch all that, but that was good anyway.
What was your favorite?
Pretty interesting.
Favorite presentation at Anarchapulco?
The kid from Argentina who came down and had started Monero Town. So
the basketball playing
town,
one.
Soccer.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So he had a soccer team there. They're trying to get the girls' basketball team sponsored, by the way. But they illegalized betting, wouldn't let them bet, or somehow they shut it down. So they heard about what was going on in El Salvador, and they decided that they would do that where they are. But Bitcoin was too expensive to use, so they reached out to the Monero community, and the Monero community helped them get that going. And now 70% of the town accepts Monero. The barbers, the hotels, the coffee shops, everything. They're all taking Monero.
And where is that town at?
It's in our northern Argentina.
It's Ibera. It's with an I. It's Ibera.
Right. Yeah.
I heard about this from Ian.
So that right. would have been on the crypto day. So each day of each day of Anarchapoco had a different theme. Like I presented on Thursday, which was like the sovereign living day. Then there was a crypto day. Do you know off the top of your head what the other themes of the other days were?
Flat Earth.
Just kidding. Like Anarchia, and I don't know, there was like yoga and plant medicine type stuff. And I mean, I had so much other stuff to do.
Right.
You know, those aren't things that I'm really into, but other people seem to like them. So
the regenerative farming thing.
Crypto's my thing.
Regenerative farming sounds really interesting. I'm into listening to people talk about that because it seems like it's the most natural way to go. Like, you're getting off of pesticides and letting like your cows poop on the grass, and then it's more fertile instead of using fertilizers and pesticides.
Yeah, and using the rest of the animals. I mean, I was just watching something before Jay sent this message about Harris Ranch, where he's using the chickens and the pigs and the sheep and the cows, and they just all work together. Work together symbiotically
rotational
the soil and
rotational grazing. So the thing with chickens, when you run cattle and then you run your chickens over and then you run your pigs over, or you run your cows, your sheep, so they're all different species, so they all have different parasites. So the thing is when you just have a whole bunch of cattle on the same part of land, the cows eat all the same grasses, and then they just keep on, you know, tearing it up the same spots, and the soil doesn't really get to heal. But if you take your cows off that pasture and then you put your sheep on that pasture, then the sheep will eat like, you know, different grasses than the cows and weeds or goats
this
or whatever.
This guy's running the sheep and the cows together because the parasites that are in the sheep actually help the cows, and the parasites in the cows actually help the sheep.
Okay.
So by running them together, it keeps them healthier.
It's just cool that like God worked that out already. Like, you don't have to go and create stupid fertilizers and destroy the earth. You can just do things naturally because God already figured it all out.
The way you look at nature, and all animals are kind of everywhere already, so they're already in the same places. You know, the idea of like having a field where you just have one kind of animal, like that's unnatural.
This guy's story was that it was a family farm for over 130 years, and sometime in the 40s they had started using ammonium nitrate or whatever whenever it came around, and it kind of destroyed their soil and nothing else would grow, so they stopped that and started using this organic farming, and it took them a while to get out of the hole, but now it's super profitable and everything works perfect.
Yeah, the synthetic manure started coming out in like the 50s, and then it started getting kind of subsidized in the 60s. So it was actually so to put synthetic manure down on your ground as a crop farmer, for example, they would it was way easier to apply than the manure. And the problem with manure is it had a lot of seeds in it from like other, you know, crops that you didn't, you know, really want growing, let's say in your wheat or in your corn or in your barley. Actually, barley was a real big thing that was a problem keeping like other grains out of. And so the synthetic manure was they got all the farmers hooked on it. And what it's worked out to today with farming is you're basically not going to make a living as a farmer in the U.S. unless you're government subsidized. And in order to get that government crop subsidy, federal crop insurance, you have to use Monsanto growing practices. So you have to use all these synthetic fertilizers, synthetic herbicides, all these herbicides and
it's
chemicals.
Evil. That's just like, evil.
Like you, if you are a government subsidized crop farmer and you're raising a crop of corn, you are required to put a minimum amount of Roundup on the corn every year.
I have noticed differences in my mood and outlook and energy and like lack of brain fog just because recently I cut out corn.
Yeah.
It's in so much stuff, and I've just always been like, oh, whatever, it's just vegetable, but it's not just the fact that I didn't know it was actually PUFAs in the body, polyunsaturated fatty acids, which are also the problem with seed oils. I didn't know that it turns into PUFAs in the body, but also, so I learned that recently. The other thing is just what you're saying, that it's all covered in glyphosate.
Yeah. So the problem with glyphosate, it's a mineral inhibitor. And I did a podcast with a guy the other day. Actually, I met at Anarchapulco. And I can't remember the name of his podcast off the top of my head to pitch it. But we were talking about like when the crop sprayer, when they're spraying that Roundup, like when it drives over you, if you're underneath it, you don't even feel the actual product that is dropping it. It's such a small amount. So basically all you literally need is one drop. So like the minimum requirement is 48 ounces per acre of Roundup to be put on the corn. So they take 48 ounces and it gets mixed with, you know, like 70 or 80 gallons of water. And then that's dispersed over an acre roughly. And it's a very, very fine mist. Hmm. And the Roundup is really sticky. They actually also...
So it's oily and sticky.
Yeah. So there's also another chemical they put in there that's like an adjuvant. It makes it stick to the plant and uptake to the plant. But to kill an apple tree, all you need is literally one drop of Roundup to get on one leaf of an apple tree. And the only reason I know this is I know a crop farmer, a place I was working out in Colorado, and the wind was blowing out of the north and he was spraying his Roundup. And he basically destroyed about 70% of an apple orchard that was a mile south of him. And it turned into like a $7 million lawsuit.
That sucks.
And the federal crop insurance just paid for it. So the apple guy made out really good because he was struggling. He just took the money and, you know, now it's actually fields that that guys are just putting Roundup ready, you know, whatever on the apple orchard. There's, you know, just a few apple trees left. But it's so powerful that all you need is to get a little bit of Roundup on one. So, but the problem with Roundup is a lot of the weeds are becoming resistant to it because that's just the way nature works. So now the maximum recommendation of Roundup is like a, 96 or 150 something ounces per application per acre. And those guys are literally putting 200 and 300 ounces of Roundup per application on their corn to really kill the weeds. And what happens is genetically modified corn. And Roundup basically came out of Agent Orange. So the fungus, the gene splicing that they're doing with corn came out of essentially a pit in Springfield, Massachusetts, where the Monsanto Corporation was dumping Agent Orange, and they found this fungus growing in there. So they spliced this fungus into the corn, and it works just how they wanted. But what happens is corn, Roundup Ready corn, takes the glyphosate and it puts it in a protein molecule, encapsulates it in a protein molecule, and it deposits it where it deposits protein.
Hmm.
Where's the protein in the corn? It's in the kernel.
And so that's just going
so
directly into
now
your body.
When your body consumes that corn, the enzymes in your body break down that protein membrane that is encapsulated the glyphosate, and then now your body is absorbing and digesting and dealing with a mineral inhibitor, and therefore your body is not able to uptake minerals. So everything that you're consuming is less bioavailable. And I believe Roundup, for this particular reason, is a major reason why like the nations of the world that use Roundup have the fattest people in the world. And also, you know, the fact that all the stuff that makes you fat comes from, you know, Roundup Ready beets, Roundup Ready corn, you know, your high fructose corn syrup, your sugar, all that stuff. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's where the gluten allergies and everything come from as well, no?
I believe that, too. I'm always thinking, why would it be that I can't eat something that humans have been eating for thousands of years? Why would that be the case? It's probably just something that they're doing to it now. It's probably that they're spraying it or...
Yeah, so definitely gluten is full of Roundup because when they... Just before they harvest wheat, like 2 weeks before they harvest wheat, they use Roundup as a desiccant.
Desiccant.
Desiccant. Yeah. And to dry off the wheat. And they do this to to increase
the
yield.
Didn't Ernie Hancock and his show, they were the ones to break that news?
Well, really? I broke that to Ernie.
Oh, you broke it to him. Okay,
because
yeah.
when I was working in Colorado, why are they spraying Roundup on the wheat?
Yeah, so get this. What they're doing to get, you know, higher yields by drying it out, you know, so it goes to market and it's like dry. They were actually killing the wheat with the glyphosate.
And the reason they're doing that.
Like a really high dose of it in the product. And it's crazy. It's absolutely, yeah.
So it has to do with the process. So the machine that harvests the wheat is called a combine. So a combine takes and it strips the wheat off the chaff. And then it drops all the chaff on the ground, which is your straw, and then it takes all of the wheat kernels, the wheat berries, and it puts them into what they call a tank. And if the wheat is green, what'll happen is it won't separate the wheat from the chaff. The wheat berries will go right out on the ground with the straw. And if you have any weeds in the field, so there's this weed called binder weed, which I've pulled out of the combine before because we did wheat harvest. My stepfather, actually, he did not spray any Roundup on his wheat because he had an exclusive contract for certified glyphosate-free wheat. And it was all going to animal feed. And they were paying like, you know, $3 more a bushel for this wheat. So he just didn't spray on it. So what we had to do was actually walk in front of the combine and pull these weeds because we didn't want the combine sucking them up. But this one particular weed was called binder weed, and we're literally got an oxygen acetylene torch and, you know, cutting dikes, wire cutters, mm-hmm. to cut these binder weed out of the combine. It was really difficult. So we just started walking ahead of the combine and just, you know, picking the weeds because he didn't do like a lot of, he just did his corners of his fields in wheat. He didn't do, you know, tens of thousands of acres. He maybe did like, I don't know, 300 acres in total. But so it's definitely, you know, a difference. And if you look at gluten under a microscope, and a guy who told me about this was a seed and chemical rep for Cargill Agriculture. So Cargill is basically a Monsanto company. And he's like, oh yeah, he goes, I won't eat anything that has wheat, because if you look at gluten under a microscope looks like a ball of rubber bands, and it is just a perfect place to hold on to glyphosate. And they spray it pretty heavy on the wheat. You know, 2 weeks before they harvest it, so it's dry and crunchy, so they are able to get all of the wheat out of the combine, and, you know, out of the straw.
That's terrible. It's just really evil stuff, and a lot of people don't know that George Washington Carver, who you learn in school, oh, he just made peanut butter. Don't look any further. Well, he was all about, hey guys, I see this trend towards nitrates and or whatever it is that they nitrites, whatever it's called, that they use for fertilizer. I'm seeing this trend towards fertilizer and pesticides. We need to stop this, and we need to go to, basically he was describing regenerative farming, and nobody listened to him, and they kicked him out of his college he worked at in Alabama. But I really believe in all that stuff, but I want to know about why Danny moved to Mexico, because you're an American, right, Danny?
Yeah, I didn't move to Mexico. Oh. I'm nomadic, so I live half the year in the U.S. and half the year down here. I make my way back to Austin whenever there's a hailstorm, because I'm a roofing contractor. And the rest of the time, I'm just traveling around trying to do stuff.
I was wondering do you feel more free in Mexico? It's kind of a topic we've been talking about here on the show.
Yeah, in some cases, you know, not always. There's a, you know, there's a presence, a military presence everywhere, although they don't mess with you, but, you know, it's still troubling.
It's more for show, in my opinion.
Yeah, and crooked cops. I mean, I don't worry about being robbed by anybody that doesn't have a badge.
Huh.
Yeah.
I've heard, like, they'll pull you over.
That happened a few times.
I know. I prefer. I prefer the paying the bribes to paying tickets.
The thing. Yeah.
It's more upfront.
Yeah,
same thing.
You don't have to go to court.
Yeah, you don't have to go to court. There's not, you know, points on a license. It's way better. I mean, it's annoying, and it's like it sucks that even that happens. Yeah. But it's just way better, and it's not even that expensive necessarily. And you can just argue with them, too. And if you know what you're doing and you know kind of what your rights are and what situations you're in, I've seen people argue with the cops in Mexico, and the cop just get fed up and walk away.
Even like white Americans?
Yes. I've seen people do it. So it's, you know, if you know how, like, things work, you can
I've had them, you know, you tell them, I don't have any cash. I only have a credit card. If the bribe is big enough, they will follow you to the ATM. They've done that to me. So,
whoa,
yeah,
that's awful.
But you know, the reason why, with as far as Anarchapulco, you know, I've been to all of them. I started coming in 2015, and over the last 5 years, I guess I've been working with Anarchapulco, scheduling everything and getting the crypto going and working with the orphanage and just doing all the different outreach stuff that we actually do in the community around there. Colin and Jay helped me out quite a bit with that. We went out one day and did some stucco work on a guy's house. One of the taxi drivers for Anarchapulco, his house was damaged in the hurricane.
His house was straight up leveled.
I went down there for that. Yeah, his house was pretty jacked up. And
I've been meaning to ask.
Put some money together.
I've been meaning to ask you.
Put money together and build that, rebuilt his house, and they're almost done with it now. So
was he in the house when it got blown away, or did they out?
No, they left. They went and hid in the car.
Okay. The whole family was in the car.
The whole family hid in their car to ride the hurricane out, and it leveled. It leveled his son's house that was right next to it, and then his house was just mangled. It was just made out of like coconut boards and stuff like that. And we put the money together. Basically, Rebecca from Anarchapulco and myself, we donated money, and then the Otis Fund from Anarchapulco, the Hurricane Otis Fund, matched what we donated, and that built the house up to where it was. So there was still about 25% left to go on the walls, and we raised money with the auction to finish that up and to get him his roofing materials. So when I left Acapulco a couple of weeks ago or whatever, like right after you guys did, I think the same time you guys did, I had went over to his house and delivered 2 truckloads of sand for him so that the concrete guys could get back on building the walls and stuff. So he had all the materials there. He just had to get the guys to do the rest of the work. But man, you guys showed up. We had the little kid from Norway was helping us as
Gustav.
Well. He was better. He was a
the
much
little
better
entrepreneur.
Colin, actually,
isn't he the little entrepreneur that made the cup you gave me?
Yeah. I gave Bonnie a couple of coffee cups because I bought Gustav. I bought all his swag he didn't sell.
Nice.
And, after it all.
So 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. Don't go anywhere. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live.
Hi, I'm Derek J. I don't want a politician to represent me. To me, government is the idea that one group of people can coerce everyone to comply with an edict or face increasing punishments up to and including death. Despite perhaps the most noble of intentions, the best government services are a far cry from what could be provided for by voluntary interactions. Besides, the people who call themselves the government wage wars and put peaceful people in jail for crimes involving no victims. If Starbucks used some of its money to drop bombs, I wouldn't shop there. So why would I support the American Empire? The Empire does not require my consent.
Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. You can order your copy of the Director's Cut DVD now at victimlesscrimespree.com.
Free Talk Live. We'll be right back.
radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there is no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website, forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Colin.
Jay.
And that's it. I don't know why I was expecting more for some reason. On the line with us, we have Corbett. Corbett, where are you calling from tonight?
Somerville, South Carolina.
South Carolina. What's on your mind tonight, Corbett?
I met Jay down in Anarchapoco, and the more I got to know him, the more I realized he has all the qualities that fit the community that I tend to gravitate to, and that's the bear community.
Yeah, I asked Corbett to call in because he told me about the bear community. He's like, you ever hear of this bear community? I'm like, no, what is it? And I was like, man, that's awesome.
Spelled like the animal bear?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, I'll let Corbett explain.
All right. So back in like 2017, I was listening to the Tom Woods show. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it was around 2015 that I knew something was wrong in the world. Like, I literally would have to turn my back when I ate lunch. I worked for the Boeing company. I used to build airplanes. And I would go into lunchroom and CNN would be on the TV and I'd just turn my back because the Chiron would just irritate me. And I knew something was wrong in the world.
What's the Chiron? What's that
so
mean?
I started, that's the little ticker underneath. You know, that feeds you all kinds of like information while the talking heads are talking.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I never knew that word.
Okay, they call it a Chiron, I believe.
Cool.
Anyways, so to make a long story short, I started understanding libertarianism. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head. Who was first, Jay Newton. No. Pete Quinones? You know whoever Pete Quinones?
Yeah, I know who Peter Quinones is. He now calls himself a post-libertarian, but he's probably libertarian when you heard his interview.
Well, I was listening to him when he wasn't even using his name.
Oh.
Yeah, he wasn't using his name because I think he still had a job and he was afraid of blowback. So anyways, to make a long story short, he turned me on to Tom Woods. I started listening to Tom Woods. Well, the comedian Owen Benjamin at the time was living in Saranac Lake, New York. And so Tom Woods interviewed Owen Benjamin. And I never heard of the guy. But his interview just wrong, so true. Like, I just love the way the guy was speaking. I thought that he was genuine, and you know, he was standing up for a lot of things that I was against. And shortly thereafter, I wouldn't say he was an A-list comedian; he was a B-list comedian, but he was highly sought after in the business. And he'd been there like 16 years. He stood up against the trans child agenda. And they blackballed him. They kicked him out of everything. Like, took away all his ways of making a living. So he was kicked out of CAA, kicked out of Hollywood. He could no longer tour because any venue that he called, they would say, yeah, sure. He'd sell tickets, and in the last minute, they'd cancel on him. And so he finally figured out that the only places he could do comedy on the road in order to make a living for his family was libraries and people's personal property, private property. So I think around 2018, I started following the guy. And to make a long story short, he exuded a lot of the things that he now doesn't like victim consciousness. Hmm. He was extremely angry. He still was under the Muslim spell. He was very angry at the small hats. And I don't know what else, you know, what I can say on this channel, so I'll just be kind of cryptic. So, but I watched this guy, and I just knew that he was trying to find the truth. And he was highly intelligent and extremely funny. And so, over time, I watched him get better and better and better. And he grew a family of four young sons. And he moved from Saranac Lake to Washington near Gig Harbor. And then when COVID hit and he couldn't stand all the people wearing masks and he didn't want to fight any longer, he moved to North Idaho, and that's where he lives now. And ever since then, he's been running a podcast, and it got kicked off of all kinds of platforms. It's been banned in all kinds of places. He was kicked off of Patreon, not for something he did on Patreon, but for something he did off of Patreon. And so it was a huge wake-up call to me, just how much control the powers that be have.
What's his podcast called?
What is it called? So his website where it's shown is called Unbearables. No, it's not. It's called Unauthorized TV.
Okay.
There's a gentleman, but you know who Vox Day is?
No, I don't know who that is. Is okay. He another
so
podcaster?
Vox Day, yeah, he's a podcaster and intellectual.
Okay.
He lives in, I think, Italy or Spain? I think he lives in Italy. He runs Castellia House and Arkhaven Comics. And between Owen and Vox Day, they came up with the idea that, like, literally, if you don't own it, you don't control it. So what they decided was, well, it's only fair. YouTube can kick me off. Patreon can kick me off. All these, you know, PayPal kicks you off. So what they realized was we need to create our own. And so over time, they created their own. They maintain their own servers, and that's where all of the shows are found. Now, he's not opposed to putting out his content for free because some people can't afford $5 a month, let's say, for example. But we call it feeding the bear. You know, I've always been a member of Unauthorized TV for years. However, the powers of be still step in, and guess what? They kick them off their payment processor.
Yep.
So I think it's been about 2 years, and next thing you know, he gets kicked off his payment processor. And what I've noticed and what Owen has noticed is over the years that when he starts getting banned in certain places or his payment processor gets kicked off, some operation is coming.
You mean like nationwide?
Because he's speaking about something related to what they're about to do?
Maybe. Yeah. So like the last time he got kicked off, so back in 2019, back in December of 2019, they were talking about this huge purge that they were going to do on YouTube, right? So they were going to purge all these channels on YouTube. They literally only kicked him off of YouTube because he was growing exponentially. And he was making really good income because he had so many people following him and donating to his
and they've actually kicked a whole bunch of truth tellers off of YouTube or demonetized them.
I don't know how many they did in December, but he was the only one that I ever saw.
Okay, but I mean, just right along, they've been going and purging. You know, I mean,
Jeff
Berwick got kicked off.
That's been going on.
Yeah,
that's been going on for a long time. But, you know, it's really funny. So he got kicked off in December. So I think it was in anticipation of what was coming in March. Okay, so we'll just leave it at that. What's his name? The guy that owns the bar.
Max Egan.
So Max Egan, I'd never heard of the guy. He was still on YouTube. In the first week of March, when they pulled the operation, you know, the 2 weeks to, you know, surrender your will or whatever they want to call it, he was doing a walk in Australia talking about, like, this is it. You know, if you don't push back now, they're going to take everything, blah, 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 blah. And and shortly after that, he was kicked off. And then I started to try and follow him more. And next thing I know, he self-exiled to Mexico. So when I was down there, I remember the first night, Saturday night, when I think it was the opening of the bar, I went up to him and introduced myself and said hello and told him, I said, you know that podcast you did in Australia? You're doing a walk and talk? And he goes, well, not really, because I do a lot of walk and talks. I said, well, it was in the first week of COVID. Let me tell you something. You scared the holy living crap out of me, because I wasn't that quite aware. It just how nefarious some groups and entities are.
Yeah, Max Egan's done a good job waking people up, and he's a sweetheart, Max Egan. What just such a nice guy, so polite to everybody. We did a little skit, me, him, and my daughter at his bar.
Okay.
And I got like three or four takes, and it was pretty funny. The skit went, Max walks up to the table. He says, "All right, folks, your bill is $21 and somebody pulls out some dollar bills to pay the bill, and my 4-year-old daughter goes, "That's not money. This is money." And she opens up a roll of the 1/10 silver dimes, and she dumps them out on the table. And then she grabs a dollar bill and says, "This is paper," and she rips it up.
Wow. You videotaped that?
Yeah, we videotaped. We took like three takes, and Max was really cool about it. Because like the first couple of takes, Cypress was really shy. When Max walked up, she wouldn't do it. And we, because he's kind of a stranger.
You know, the money really is about the most important thing here. And that's what they're going to go after to control people. And, you know, if you just start thinking about it, it's like, okay, they could do this, they could kick you off of that, then they could do that, then they could do that. And it always is going to always boil back down to the money and
the
banking system.
Like the Canadian truckers, like they frozen. They got their bank accounts frozen.
And what's kind of amazing is our community here in New Hampshire understands like how important alternatives are, and having alternative marketplaces and money and things like that, so we don't have to rely on those systems. I mean, when they were doing things during COVID, like killing off herds of animals and stuff like that, and saying you can't go to this store and can't go to that store, we were able to do all the things that people normally need to do because we don't rely on their systems.
Today, just thinking, so how nice it was that there was a restaurant in Keene called Pho Keene Great that was open in defiance of the mask orders, and it was a place for us to go the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, that warms my heart every time I think about that.
Yeah, we were actually the freest people in the world, so to speak, and
in the Western world.
Yeah, exactly. But the alternatives is really the thing that people need to be pushing. I mean, if you care about freedom and everything, not like speaking to you right now, but just to anybody who's listening, if you care about that, you need to like look into the alternatives and promote them as much as you can. And speaking of the silver and stuff, they love that down there in Mexico, silver and the gold and gold backs. And I take a bunch down with me and I spend them while I'm down there. Not so much with locals, but more and more the locals are starting to get onto it, to where I had another bar I was going to where I was paying for all my drinks and goldbacks in Mexico. So
yeah, we were able to actually spend some goldbacks. So there was a little place that I bought fruit from, like we bought the place that had the tortilla machine. That was right there on the main drag in Acapulco.
Oh, right.
In Bonneville.
Like just a block from where you were staying.
Yeah, so,
yep, I know. Which
so the
one
second time
about.
I went in there, I'm like, "Can I pay with silver? Can I pay with these?" And
wait, how did you communicate with them? Those people didn't speak any English.
And then she was like, no. And we were using the phone a little bit.
Okay, okay, yeah.
And then the next time I walked, so I just gave her a piece of silver. Yep. And then the next time I went in there, she was basically, told me the pesos, and then she said, or three of those silver things.
Nice.
Or three of the coins. So I gave her three coins and a gold back, and that was pretty cool.
Nice.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And most people don't know, Mexico is one of the last countries to pull silver out of the coins. I forget what year it was, but they had a silver coin much later than any other country did. And they're
La
the number
Plata.
One. And they're the number one producer of silver in the world. And they have towns dedicated to silver smithing, Taxco, and I forget what the other one is. But yeah, it's a big thing down there. They like silver actually a bit more than gold.
And I said La Plata because they call money La Plata, which means silver.
That's an Argentine thing. They don't do that in Mexico. Yeah, it was just a slang. They just say dinero or efectivo for cash.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
Well, thank you for the call, Corbett. We have another call on the line. I'm not sure who this is, but unscreen caller, you're on Free Talk Live. What's on your mind?
It's your daddy, the evolutionary capitalist, young Skeet.
Why did you change to daddy? Please go back to your boy, please.
Because of Milo, yesterday's show, I felt it fitting.
Milo?
Milo?
Yeah, you, Milo.
No, his name's Colin.
Milo?
Yeah, this is Milo Yiannopoulos. No, it's Colin.
Hey, Milo.
Colin.
Colin.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Colin. Sorry, you look like a Milo. So, dang, there's so much to debunk today with Jay on the show. I kind of wanted to discuss the dangerous social construct of freedom. But before that, I just needed a quick dopamine fix. Hey, Jay, guess what? I found the definition for includes in the tax code.
Can we not talk about this today? It's so boring. Please, do you have anything else on the...
Sir, how much dopamine are you on right now?
I mean, Jay's been defending this like tooth and nail, and I just
want to talk about something else. Honestly, we ask Sarah from New Mexico. When Sarah from New Mexico calls in with nothing to talk about except drivers in New Mexico keep hitting homeless people on the road, we ask her, like, Sarah, please choose another topic, and then we let her on sometimes. So,
you know what I tell my kids about their bicycles?
Mm-hmm.
I am, and actually my son's really good about it. So he's got this little balance bike that he cruises around on, and he saw it in the driveway today, and he got it, and he didn't even get on it, and he walked it right over, and he goes, "Cars don't drive here."
Aww.
And I tell him, don't park your bike where a car can drive or it'll get ran over. And so there is a bicycle. One of my nephew's bicycles is at the house, and it's got a broken wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that's because Ryder is my nephew's name. He left it where a car can drive on it. So he knows where cars don't drive. So that's where he puts his bicycle.
Oh.
Well, the homeless people, if my 2-year-old can figure that out, you think that the homeless people might be able to figure out, you know, just to hang out where cars don't drive. But
yeah, we're always telling Sarah this.
Right. But since all the homeless drug addicts are on welfare, because it's the only way you can really be a career drug addict is to be on welfare or to be a trust funder or to be, you know, the president's son, you know, or congressman's son, it's like, but what's happening, I'm sure these homeless people are either like totally drunk or they're fentanyled out or whatever opiate
that's
they're
what
on, and they
saying.
Pass
we're
out
like,
in the
Sarah,
road.
Are they hitting them in the road? And then I'm like, okay, then why were they in the road?
Where in New Mexico,
sidewalk,
too? I mean, like
Albuquerque.
Just Albuquerque? Okay.
Which is basically just a liberal, you know,
it's a terrible
cesspool.
Place.
Yeah.
Terrible, dangerous place.
Yeah, that's where the mayor or the governor or something or somebody did like, you can't carry any guns.
Yeah, it was actually a nice story out of New Mexico, ultimately, because the people from all over showed up open carrying.
Right.
And the police of Albuquerque refused to enforce that
right.
There was going to be no more guns, or at least no more open carrying. So did you think of a different topic, Skeeter?
I couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, because I put you on hold because I needed you to come up with a different topic. If you just want to talk about the definition of something... No one wants to hear about that.
Okay, just as long as Jay concedes. Concede, Jay. Give me my dopamine hit, boy. Hey, so let's talk about the dangerous social construct of freedom and how it's inconsistent with the market. And it's truly the most dangerous idea. It's more dangerous than communism itself, believe it or not.
How many people have
freedom
killed?
Freedom is inconsistent with the market?
Yep. Free. Well, I used to call myself a weak libertarian because I didn't believe in. So I believe in freedom from the idea of implementing like a system that implements democracy as a way to distribute at least some of the capital throughout the society. But I don't believe in freedom from all aggression because I think aggression is a valid strategy for the market to undertake as long as the incentives aren't perverted. So that's what I think.
Well, how do the incentives become perverted?
What's that?
How do the incentives become perverted?
In democracy, it's so there's other things.
No, in a free market, in a like without the democracy, just in an anarchist sense. How does
anarchist sense with freedom? It's because there's no one there to provide defend natural rights and Lockean property. There's no one there. Right. It has to be, number one, profitable in order for anyone to even consider undertaking defending property for somebody.
You know that defense is not aggression, right?
Himself.
You know that defense is not aggression. So that doesn't answer his question.
What are you talking about?
You said that. You said that you're saying why it's moral to have aggression and it's necessary for a market. And your answer was something about defense. So that you're not really answering. You're not explaining your position.
I'm talking about why would a society defend against an act of an aggression, especially when the act of aggression increases the productivity for society. I can give a concrete example if you want. I don't really think concretely, but what was that?
He said, like, war?
Yeah, war is, you know, like, a lot of these, you know, especially, you know, real status conservatives are like, oh, we need to have another war to get the economy back on track.
That's not true. That doesn't work. I mean, war is literally destroying property. So how is the net?
No, not necessarily.
You're the one that...
War is expensive. I admit, war is an expensive strategy, but it's not so expensive that you can't you can't generate a profit from it.
I mean, some people are profiting.
Let me give one example.
That's what I'm always explaining to him. He's like taking a different stance than he normally does. It's stupid. He's that stupid.
The American Revolution. Am I mute? The American Revolution, right? The American Revolution was one instance where war is profitable, where you detach yourself from a bad system in order to increase productivity. And you can also do this. So I believe that
that's not the war's fault. It's not like the war made money. It was the getting this thing over with, not being taxed to death by the English, and then getting them off your backs and then moving on.
It's not about taxation. Taxation is not necessarily theft, and it isn't in your case in here. I've already proven that, and I'm going to prove it again this
What's
Sunday,
my case? But, I'm not paying... Well, I'm the person who pays the property taxes here, unfortunately, but other than that, I'm not paying any taxes.
Yeah, but taxes aren't theft.
But, so
domestic
what,
taxes
what
aren't theft. I
case
don't want to get off track, but... what was that? I don't want to get off track, but...
603-283-6160. Can Skeeter ever answer a question or make any sense? I don't think so. If you can make sense, 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live.
The Shire Free Church offers a sanctuary to those seeking an escape from state churches.
The Shire Free Church is an interfaith, diverse group of people that may not share identical theological beliefs.
As a member in or minister of the Shire Free Church, you are a sovereign individual and may be the faith of your choice.
We don't claim to have all of the answers.
We are open to all peaceful people.
We want to learn from each other.
What unifies the Shire Free Church and its diverse members is peace,
love,
and liberty. There are many paths to God, one for every individual.
The Shire Free Church does not define a specific path beyond these parameters that must be your foundation.
Peace as your way.
Love as your guide.
And liberty as your light.
Learn more at church.shiresociety.com.
That's church. ShireSociety.com. Live talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number. That's 603-283-6160. And I'd like to thank Chris Cohen, who's a silver level amplifier with us. That means that Chris Cohen is giving money to the amplifier program, which means that he is helping to advertise, market, promote, and support Free Talk Live. And if you'd like to learn more, you can go to amps.freetalklive.com. That's amps.freetalklive.com. And thank you so much to Chris. And that's amps.freetalklive.com. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Colin,
and Jay.
And we have Dave Ridley calling from New Hampshire on the line. Dave, what's on your mind?
Hey, this is probably not the most important race in New Hampshire, but it sort of provides a microcosm of what it's like when you run for local office in New Hampshire, or maybe anywhere. But you guys know Russell Canning. He's a friend of the show, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So he lives here in Winchester, And he's running for, he's a free stater, and he's running, he's also an NH Exeter. He runs NHExit.org. He's running for school board. And so now he's, you know, he's always avoided politics because he's like, he's considered, you know, a Christian anarchist. So his eyes are just bugging as he's having to get involved in this stuff. He can't believe it. So what happened just over the last week or two is that so there was a Meet the Candidates event that was scheduled for a couple of days ago. And so he's going to go. And then, like at the last minute, right before the Meet the Candidates event happens, there's some Keene decides it's not going to accept Winchester students anymore. Keene schools aren't going to accept Winchester students anymore. it's going to go into effect in about 3 years, right? It's really not, it's not pressing, but the entire town loses its mind, and they cancel the Meet the Candidates meeting so that they can have an emergency board meeting to discuss the change in policy that's going to happen in 3 years. The emergency meeting happens just 2 days before just the regular meeting, stuff they could have just talked about in the regular meeting, right? And it wipes out the candidates event. So they reschedule the candidates event for 2 days later, and then they cancel that. That gets canceled too, and they have a regular meeting today, I guess it was. And
what was the reason for the second cancellation?
Yeah, it's just like everyone's like, just their chain is just, the entire town's chain is being jerked. And nothing got done. It's just like they didn't even have any information at the emergency meeting. They had a little bit more information at the more recent meeting, but why would anyone want to be involved in this? I can't believe he's doing this.
Well, Jay also ran for an office, and it's one of those things that, like, libertarians don't want to have to do, but sometimes you just feel like it's better you to be doing it than some terrible Democrat in Jay's case or whoever's going to run in Russell Canning's case.
It isn't that libertarians don't want to do it. It's that people that have meaningful stuff to do don't want to run for office.
And Russell's also, like, a busy working person.
Yeah, he's got things to do. So what you have is a bunch of career parasites, you know, filling up all these Democrat positions everywhere.
Wait,
mentally ill.
Me, we don't have any, like, you know, bored libertarians in this state.
No, they're all very occupied.
All of them?
Do you know some bored libertarians that got nothing better to do but play video games and do drugs?
That'll be my activism for this week. I'll look up all the ones that I know are basically boring and doing nothing, and then I'll chastise them.
There you go.
Yeah.
Call them out. Put them to work.
That's what we have Slacktivism for, basically. It's a signal group that I think our caller Alu started, and it's all about the people who don't really want to put in that much work, but the least they can do is
that's a good way I could shape people. I could actually create a couple groups and called it Slackers, and then just add all those people into the group, and then they'll know who they are, you know, just because I've added them into that group.
Just in case you didn't know, you are a slacker. That's why you were added to this group.
And yeah, that'll be in the title.
You get a daily chastising from Colin.
Because every now and then you meet a guy who, like, creeps out to girls, for example, and, like, he doesn't know he creeps out to girls until you explain to him he creeps out to girls. And sometimes they get really upset. But I've definitely have talked to a couple of guys that creep out the girls, for example, and they're like, oh, I do that? I don't want to do that.
Yeah, thanks.
Like,
for
they had
me.
No idea that, you know, it's like, hey, if I got a booger in my mustache, you know, please tell me. But, you know, dude, you're creeping the girls out. And he's like, give me some examples of what I can do what I'm doing to creep out the girls. So me and a couple other guys started telling this guy, you know, for example, a few things he was doing, and he stopped doing those things, and he doesn't creep out the girls anymore. So
nice. So funny. So is that all you had for us today, Dave Ridley?
Well, I have something that I've been trying. I have this, like, long-term philosophy. Like, I'm going to be doing enough state activism and federal activism. I don't really have to do activism in my town, right? Like, there's no need to anger someone who lives two blocks from me when those might be the people I'm relying on when the lights go out. So I just have a policy of not doing a local activism, basically.
You're pissing them all off in Keene, so they...
Yeah, I'd like, when I lived in Woodstock, I didn't do any ambush interviews in Woodstock. When I lived in Bedford, I rarely did ambush interviews in Bedford. I just would go somewhere else. Don't fight where you live. You know?
You want them to come pitchfork. This
is actually a good strategy. Again, we should all organize, and what we'll do is, like, each one of us will tell the one in the next town over what to do in the next town over.
Yeah, who to target.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I'm not sure this is a good idea for everyone to do. It's just something I've been doing. And so, you know, going to Russell's meetings
to go to
and ambush
Winchester.
If I were to go to Russell's meetings and ambush a bunch of interviews, that would kind of violate my policy. So what I did instead was I've just been wearing a Russell Canning sign around my neck, and it's like a sort of a sandwich board. And then a pickup litter. So I went to pick up litter at this event tonight. Instead of ambush interviewing people, I just picked up litter all around the site, wore a Russell Canning sign, and then went home.
Nice. That's pretty good activism.
That's a good idea. You know what? I could do that, and I could add a little to that. Because I've been training my kids. That was actually one thing I had to, like, stop my kids from doing in Mexico was picking up trash. I'm like, guys, there's so much trash, we can't pick it all up. But, like, at Pork Fest, up by the kid area, they had no trash cans for, like, the first several days last year. So I would just carry a couple of, like, cellophane bags with me, and I give a cellophane bag to each kid, and let them pick up trash, because every time we walk around my property, if there's any trash, I make it a point to pick it up. And same thing when we go anywhere, we just kind of
pick up
trash.
So that's where all the trash has been going that I keep dumping?
Yeah, all your seltzer cans. Yeah, we keep on picking them up.
I wasn't done with that. I just wanted it to go get flat before I drank it, you know?
If I wore a political sign and walked around with my kids picking up trash out of the vent and had my kids, like, wearing these little, you know, make shirts or signs, that'd be pretty, you know, pretty good little attention getter. Because anytime I go around somewhere picking up trash and my kids, people can't believe that my kids actually do it. And I'm like, they just do what I do. You know, that's all they want to do. Several times we've gone to beaches and there's just like a bunch of like bottle caps and plastic bottles and cans. Yeah. And, you know, me and the kids pick them up and go throw them in the trash. And people are like, oh, my God, that's great. And then, like, old ladies start picking up trash, too, because the kids are and stuff. But, you know, so that's a really great idea. Dave.
Yeah. How could you be mad at it?
Right.
Yeah. Sorry. It makes me think of something talking about Mexico again. I was in a particular town. And they had some signs up, and it said, you know, please, you know, donate a little bit of money here for the, I don't know if it's specifically said old ladies, but that's what I saw, old ladies who were walking around picking up the trash. And, you know, I kind of think about it, like, there's just a lot of laziness and a lot of unproductive stuff. And it's, you know, like, people who are retired, and it's like, what are you doing with your life? You're just sitting around watching TV? Like, I mean, you could be, one, going for a walk, that's healthy. You could be picking up trash. And then you could be listening to a podcast or something, too. And, I mean, like, think about how much healthier your life would be and the whole world would be, you know, if you did something like that.
Well, Dave, is that all you had for us today?
Well, I guess the other observation is it's been really nice to see how friendly the Winchester GOP has been to him and to me and to Free Staters in general in Winchester. You know, we've all been here for a long time, and just over the years, I guess we've all gotten a little bit closer. But the Republicans here, just, you know, at least the Republican Party establishment has just been really nice to us, and that's not something I Free Staters get from all Republicans. So it's just to be appreciated.
What do you attribute that to?
I know why it is, but go ahead.
Yeah,
no,
what?
I don't know why it is. I don't know why.
Oh,
so I have a very good friend that lived on Burt Hill Road.
Is that Winchester?
Yeah, like basically right on his house is basically right on the other side of the mountain where Dave lives. Dave, you know where Burt Hill Road is, right?
Goes
up over the hill. So if you go out to where Route 10 is and take a right, like you're going to go down to Massachusetts, the first
but don't do it. Don't, please don't.
The
go
first
down there.
Right.
Don't cross the
The first right is Burt Hill Road, and it's used to be a dirt. Well, it's actually not Burt Hill Road. You got to take that right, and then you go down and take a left, and it's Burt Hill Road. Well, anyways, that guy lived there from like the 80s, and actually he grew up kind of there, so he might have lived there. So he bought the house that I knew him at, and he sold the property like 5 years ago. He moved out of there, and he moved up to Unity, New Hampshire, up north. Anyways, very good friend of mine. Him and my dad were like horse trading buddies, and he basically what had happened. So in Winchester, there's a Section 8 housing there, sort of on the north end of town. Are you familiar with it?
I think I know what you're talking about. Yep. It's like an apartment. It looks pretty nice, actually, but maybe it's...
It looks like townhouses. It's right off the main road.
Right, right. Okay. And it's like its own community. It's kind of like a little grade uphill. Well, like Winchester, like the schools like really didn't have a problem. It was like a pretty quiet like community. And I'm just going off of like third hand information what this guy was telling me. And basically he was like, yeah, Winchester was like a really, really great small town until they put in that Section 8 housing complex. And then all this like, you know, trouble happened. Like the police are just constantly responding there. Mm-hmm. There's constant domestic violence. There was no drugs in Winchester until the Section 8 housing came in. And then,
this stuff is done on purpose. It's purpose all across the country.
Yeah. And he was really like, one of the things that really upset this guy is he had four kids and like two, like, and then like one of his kids is like, you know, hanging out with some girl down there that's, you know, in the, we'll call it the projects, is rural projects, New Hampshire, you know, Section 8 housing. And that just brought a lot of stress into the town. And the Democrats were like really, really like hardcore about this. We need to have this. We need to include these, you know, poor people. And I don't know when this came in. I think it was sometime in the mid 80s or the 90s. They're fairly modern buildings. You know, they're not that old. And that just like really drove that town down pretty hard. So a lot of the old school Republicans and people who remember what Winchester was, you know, before that Section 8 housing came in. And I guess it hit the town like a ton of bricks, from what I understand, because that was just one of the things. And also it made the fact that all that Section 8 housing came in, there's some kind of deal with the property taxes because they're not really collecting property taxes. Like it's like a regular normal like house. On that Section 8 deal. I don't understand how this works. Like I said, this is third hand information. Basically everybody's property taxes like went up like a significant amount in Winchester as soon as like that thing got done. And it was because it was like all these services and now they like need new fire
Definitely
truck.
The services,
you know,
and
they had all these excuses to like crank up the budget, and then like, but this place wasn't really paying like towards the budget.
It's
kind of like in college towns, the taxes are really expensive because all the properties that the college owns are exempt from taxation. Even if it's a private college that makes a ton of profit, like Harvard, for example, like Massachusetts, like the taxes are insane there because the college owns so much of the real estate and they don't pay any taxes. But also the college like uses like 90% of the resources that are, you know, funded by the taxes. And that's like Keene, Henniker, you know, these places that, you know, Amherst, Massachusetts, I have a bunch of colleges, the property taxes are insane. But that has a lot to do with it. You start asking some of these old timers about the, especially the Republican guys, Dave, in town there about the Section 8 housing, if they remembered what that did to the community, and, you know, when it got put in and what their thoughts are, you'll get a much better response from them because, like I said, this is third hand information, but, you know,
I totally believe that they're doing that kind of thing on purpose because I see this Section 8 looking stuff around New Hampshire, and I'm like, it's just weird. Like, it doesn't look like it belongs there. The specific one you're talking about,
you'll see them in towns. I mean, you'd expect it in a larger city of a certain size.
In my neighborhood, the trolls made fun of me once, saying I think I'm better than them. But there's like this Section 8 housing just down the street from me. I'm like, why is it there? Like, why is it just sat in the middle of like my kind of cute neighborhood? Like, that's kind of on purpose, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, if you're gonna give people like cheap housing, like they should have to have the place where nobody wants to be. It's like nice. It's a nice area. There could be like privately owned houses. I just think if you're begging to be given money, like you should be put in the place nowhere else wants to be. No one else wants to be. It's like if you are actually disabled and people want to help you, that's one thing. But I don't think that that's what most of those people are. I walk down there. So I like walk past there all the time to walk my dog there. It's where he really wants to go for some reason. So I go down there. I could take a left. It's much better if I take a left, but he always wants to go right. I go right into the Section 8 housing. And it's like just a bunch of people. They're totally fine. They're just like smoking cigarettes, sitting around smoking cigarettes. The other day, I was really annoyed because I saw a girl like my age, like fit, young, nice clothes go into one of the buildings. I was just like, What's her excuse for living here? You know, like and taking a walk. She's obviously can walk. Can she not work? You know.
Yeah, I had a little bit of experience in Missouri at one point in time. I stayed with a friend, and he actually lived in like a trailer park. So I was actually in a trailer park, and he was dating this girl. And, you know, come to find out, if I start talking to him for a while, she had gotten onto Social Security disability. And she was like, you know, she was like 20 at the time. So basically, she's going to be on it for the entire rest of her life, right? And what I noticed is she was like the most unpleasant person in the world. And I would talk with him about it, and we came to the conclusion that if she had to have a job, like she would have been in town somewhere, she would have been a server or something like that, she'd have to be nicer to people, because you have to be nice to people when you work with them. But she doesn't have to. She just gets this check and could be as horrible of a person as she wants. And she has all day to do it, too, now. So, you know, idle hands, you know, how does that phrase go? Idle hands do the devil's work or something?
Hmm.
You know, that I see that so true all the time with people. The busier you are, the more you don't care about drama. You're like, whatever, I'm just going to ignore you and go over here and do this productive thing that I'm already doing.
You'll notice, like, the unproductive parasite class, whether they're government employees, like just look at anybody who works in a DMV, for example, right? Mm-hmm. They're the most useless people in the world. They're nasty. They're mean. And also, like, you know, the whole thing is, like, if you're someone who is
But and also, it's those aren't real businesses, so they're not
right.
There's not a productive angle to it. So it's not like, oh, if we produce this much stuff. Well, but I mean, it's not like there's, oh, if we do this job this well or produce this much stuff, we'll make more money or we'll get more money. They just have a fixed budget. So what happens is all these secondary things become important to them. It's like, well, I'm getting paid the same amount whether I do the work or I don't do the work. So can I at least have a nice chair, or can I do this, or blah, 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 or can I wield power over people, or can I, you know?
Right. So where does a DMV employee get their dopamine hit from, right? Like the cabinet maker working in the cabinet shop gets his dopamine hit from making a really beautiful cabinet.
That somebody gives, you know, tells him right. is nice, and, you know, tells him how much they like it, and then they give him money for it, and, you know,
Right. So where does the bureaucrat get their dopamine hit from, you know, wielding power, like you said, generally. Yeah. And because they have these positions of power, because in the DMV, they love telling you no. And you can almost see, like, a lot of times, even with like a lot of your tax collectors and your mm-hmm. local town clerks, you'll start seeing this kind of stuff. So the to go on what Colin had to say is, when you have a welfare system of whatever sort, you don't have to be polite.
No, not at all.
You don't have to be considerate. You don't have to be likable.
You don't have to make friends at all.
You don't have to be valuable.
Like Dave was talking about making sure he doesn't annoy his neighbors and stuff. Like, he wouldn't have to think about that if he was just a welfare recipient.
And the thing is like, you know, 100 years ago, there was no welfare. So if Farmer John, lost his arm while farming, which, you know, farming is very dangerous, you know, especially 100 years ago, it was really dangerous. Or he got killed because, you know, the team of horses ran him over while he was logging. And, you know, Farmer John's got, you know, four kids, and, you know, his wife, Jane, takes care of the kids and takes care of the house and doesn't really have, like,
I always hear about this couple, Joe and Jane. They're really infamous.
So anyways, you know, what happened is because people liked, you know, John and his wife Jane and his children, because they were likable people, because they were friendly, because they were and knew they were hardworking, and also knew that Jane wasn't a drug addict, trying to work the system. The community was more than helpful to take care of John's family if John couldn't take care of his family.
The other thing, too, is the amount of help that was given was an appropriate amount. Right. So it wasn't like, something happened, so now you just get a free house or a free this. And they would want people to have some skin in the game. So it's like, and I have seen this different places I've been, where there's like really old people who are a little decrepit. They can't do anything and they're poor in other countries and, you know, whatever. People will give them some kind of menial job, and they might be overpaying them a little bit for it, but they are at least doing something. They are at least earning the money in a sense, you know, and they are at least getting a sense of accomplishment and helping society at the same time, you know. So when you have a smaller community, you can actually see what people really need. You know, if your neighbor's house burns down, you might be like, oh, yeah, well, he was an idiot, and he was, like, doing dumb things that burned his house down. So I'm going to help him rebuild his house, but I'm not going to rebuild the same big, giant thing that he had.
So you can just put the meth lab right back in it.
Oh, wait. Who told you about the meth lab?
You're from Missouri.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for the call, by the way, Dave Ridley. That's ridleyreport.com. You can hear more of Dave Ridley there. I didn't want to make him stay on the line. I think that was all he had to say. But I agree with all that stuff you guys are saying, and I think that if I, like, this way I always go back to, if I make a city, I'm going to keep welfare out of it, and that will just, there won't be homeless people. There won't be homeless people sitting on the side of the road asking you to wash your windows and stuff whenever you come to an intersection and things like that, because they're not, they
won't
be getting
welfare. You know what? I have to push back on that. So this is an interesting thing I saw in Mexico, because I travel around. Like Jay's now been down there, and he's been to at least one town. He's seen how things are in one area. But I travel around, and I go to other cities and different places. So I was last year in Morelia, and I stayed there for a month. Really like Morelia. Could go talking about that for quite some time. But while I was there, as you pull up to the intersection, you will see people doing things like cleaning the windshields or whatever. But they're doing something to earn it. So this was an interesting thing.
Okay, well, these people in America don't do that. They come up with a dirty thing, and they...
I have never seen a homeless guy in Manchester come up and try to clean your windows, because they're all getting welfare, and they're just doing smack.
Yeah. Mm. So here's the interesting thing, though. You know, all those like migrant caravans and stuff like that, and how there's all these populations of people moving around? So there's now groups of people... they're passing through or staying, whatever, but they're not Mexicans. They're actually like from the Caribbean. And like sometimes they're even like French speaking or something like that. It was really interesting, because you would see them and they would start going up to those same corners, but they would just have a sign saying, give me money.
Hmm.
And so it's like the Mexicans didn't like that. And, you know, they're like, we don't like these people. They're just they're not doing anything. Meanwhile, you would actually see people. You'd see like a young kid and like maybe his older brother. And they would do things where they light sticks on fire and toss them and put on a show.
Cool.
As you're waiting. Yeah, really. And so, you know, if you travel around, you'll see things like that in Mexico. It's like, man, this guy's just earned it. He just did this whole show and everything, you know? And it's like, your life is a little better, you know?
Okay, but you're not
that.
Pushing back on what I said, though, because, okay, forget the washing windows thing. So that really doesn't even really happen that much anymore. It's more just like people standing on the side of the road asking for quarters or whatever. But I don't think there will be homeless people in my Bonnie Dream City whenever I commandeer an area in New Hampshire and turn it into a city where I'm not going to allow there to be any government acceptable, you know.
Now, here's a better question. Not how are you going to keep the homeless people out. How are you going
to
keep...
I don't have to keep them out. They just won't want to come because there won't be welfare.
How are you going to keep out the people who are going to want to promote that kind of lifestyle? Like, give those people stuff to make them come there.
Maybe you have a constitution where the constitution says that you can't, that these particular rights are secure to life, liberty, and property, so you can't tax people to make them pay for the welfare situation.
Yeah.
Then you got to be able to force the constitution, so you got to give it teeth. How do we arm the constitution?
Everybody who wants to be there will have to have their own business and property to take care of and have something to do. I don't know how I'm going to enforce it. I haven't thought about it that far ahead. But without welfare, there aren't going to be people.
One time a cop was taking my constitutional rights, and this piece of paper flew in from the air and like tackled him and made him stop.
Oh, a constitution. That's what that was.
Yeah.
603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. 603-283-6160. More coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
Free Talk Live.
Talk Live, talk radio that you control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. You can call in and bring whatever's on your mind, whatever you think about what we're saying, or if you want to change the topic, it doesn't matter. It's up to you. It's Free Talk Live. And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie,
Colin,
and Jay.
And Free Talk Live is brought to you by LibertyMinded.com. Official Free Talk Live gear, like t-shirts and hoodies, are available at LibertyMinded.com. Plus, you'll find a unique collection of cool and funny Liberty-oriented clothing at LibertyMinded.com. That's LibertyMinded.com. I actually got a new Free Talk Live shirt and an LRN.FM shirt. I'll start wearing when it's not so cold in here. Because I got t-shirt versions. But we do have Sarah on the line in New Mexico. Sarah, what's on your mind, Sarah?
Yes, I just want to bring up that all this computer technology is just so frustrating, because I'm 54, and it seems like Richard, did we learn how to take a Uber ride? Somebody set it up for us.
Wow.
We did it 2 times, and then we forgot already. Now we can't figure out how to get an Uber ride again.
You got to practice.
So
you got to practice your Uber pickup.
Maybe there's someone to call. Maybe you can call like a phone number on there and see if they can help you.
So you have like a smartphone, right?
Well, he does. Richard has a smartphone, and somebody set up the Uber account. And then they programmed where we had a car pick us up, and then now we can't do it ourselves because we forgot how to do it. And everything like this is just so frustrating. Like somebody was going to refinance our mortgage, and they wanted to send us documents that we could sign on the computer. We could never figure that out. I mean, we got all caught up.
As funny as it is, I'm going to suggest a solution that's computer/phone-based. If you have the YouTube app, just go there, and for anything you're ever looking to do, like how to do this, how to do that, whatever it is, how to cook a certain kind of food, how to fix a car, how to run different programs, and you'll usually be able to find a result. And maybe you have to look at 2 different or 3 different results to get the one you want, but people put together videos and they put them on there, and it's great. It's one of the coolest things that's happened for looking for information.
YouTube search how to use the Uber app, and that'll really help you out a lot.
Yeah, but Sarah, doesn't that mean that there will be one more car on the road?
Well, you know, it's just I mean, we do it because there's no buses that go there. I mean, where we were thinking of going, it's so far out, we were going to catch the bus way one back, and when we got like pork chops or, you know, perishable food, we have to take the Uber coming back.
Are you putting homeless people's lives in danger every time you call an Uber?
I mean, you know, the thing is, it's inevitable. I mean, I try to do as much like harm reduction, but there's no way of getting around it. So,
do you sit in the front seat and you watch for homeless people while the driver is not really paying attention or is speeding, and you call out homeless person if one's in the road? Is that the harm reduction?
Well, you know, I just sit in the back like a taxi cab driver. Well, what we have to do is called Z-Trip because they're the only one that takes phone calls. We don't have to do it on the computer. And then my thing is that it's so frustrating. We can't. We're senior citizens, and I was at the library, and there's actually a course. It's got a smartphone on the picture. There's actually a course on Wednesdays and Fridays that actually help you use the computer.
Nice. So you should go to that, Sarah, definitely, because I think that that would be really helpful. Sarah used to call in to ask us things that were very much something somebody should just Google. So it would be great if Sarah goes to those classes and learns how to use smartphones more and computers more. But thank you for the call, Sarah. I just wanted to mess with her about, she's always calling saying she hates drivers and they kill homeless people in New Mexico, and now she's on the side of capitalism.
If you hit him with a car, it's not as bad as if you hit him with a bus. I saw a video where some guy's head was just like exploded like a watermelon. Ew. When the tire went over it.
Oh my gosh. That's terrible.
It kind of made me hungry for watermelon, though, I'm going to be honest.
That's gross.
Oh, wait, I shouldn't say that on air. Sorry, folks, I'm a compassionate, empathetic
Colin's
person here.
Colin's been looking at his neighbor, sizing his neighbors up for the collapse. And
you think I like thinking I'm going to have to haul my neighbor up in a tree, cut him up in little bits?
He will eat your leftist ass.
Do you know what Colin's neighbors are?
Are they leftists?
No, they're cows.
Oh.
Straight up bovine. That kind of cow.
Jay, had something you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, so you guys who've been listening to me, been hearing me talk about New Hampshire DCYF, also known as Child Protective Services. And so here in New Hampshire, because we have an actual citizen legislature that isn't much influenced by DCYF, the performance of DCYF, because we have a legislature that doesn't have a pension fund. And you know, the judge's pension fund in New Hampshire gets a lot of money based on the performance of DCYF. So this is one reason DCYF is so protected by government, because the pension funds get money based on from the Social Security Administration based on the performance of DCYF. Anyways, this past Monday, there was a House committee on investigating DCYF. And in fact, if we can put in a show notes somewhere a link to the video. Also, there is a GraniteGork.com.
Granite Grok.
Yeah, thank you for that. Is a local, news online news source, and they have an article in there about this. But so this committee to investigate DCYF, which was headed up by Leah Cushman, because Leah Cushman got many, many, many complaints as a state representative about the horrible things that DCYF and family court are doing to people, mm-hmm. and they're doing it without due process of law. So the last committee that hearing was is a 3-hour hearing on YouTube, and it was and the subject was DCYF and due process of law. So there was some people, Andrew Noyes is one of the guys who explained like what actual due process of law is very, very well. But I'll back up a little bit. In this committee at the very beginning, Leah Cushman says, yeah, we're going to ask people to take an oath. And she says in that committee that, and there was an objection from, I believe the woman's name is Baker, Representative Baker. I can't remember her first name. Anyways, and there was another Democrat on that committee who I believe objected to or objected also. So they objected to this testimony being under oath. And so now the Democrats are in a frenzy about this. Hmm. So they have actually, in a union leader, there's an op-ed sort of trying to bash Leah Cushman over this, oath. And the oath is actually not required. If you go and you watch this video that's on YouTube, the House Committee YouTube channel, and maybe Colin, you could find that video.
Yeah, I'm trying. Yeah. I'm trying to look for it right now. Yeah,
yeah. It's in the.
What did you say the first name you thought the lady was?
Baker. But if you go into Noon versus State Group that we have, you'll find the video in there, and we'll give you a better description on the link to
the
actually
Granite
look
Grok
up.
Says who it is too.
Yes, and it has it in a Granite Grok. Okay. But I want to make this easy for listeners to go check this out. So they object, and the reason that they're saying that they object to the oath, and is totally within, the statutory realm for the legislative officers, for the representatives on the committee to ask someone to be put under oath. So this is not a committee about someone's opinion on a bill. This is actual testimony from people who have been trespassed on by DCYF and the family court. In fact, people should really listen to this hearing because, it is the stories are like, unbelievable that some of the people are talking about. And it just, if you, anywhere you are, just do your, New Hampshire DCYF settlements, and you'll just see that just the amount of money the state has paid out, the liability that DCYF has created amongst the taxpayers is the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars. It might be something like $300 million in the past decade that's been paid out by the Division of Risk and Benefit of New Hampshire. So we'll see if the public records request gets answered on that particular subject. But anyways, so the Democrat on the committee says, well, if people aren't going to want to, be forthcoming if they're under oath. So Leah says, well, if they don't want to be under oath, then they don't have to be. Mm-hmm. And she's not requiring you to be under oath. She's just administering oaths. And she said that you don't have to accept the oath and you can still testify. I believe the reason the Democrats are freaking out about this is because it is actual testimony from actual victims. So once it is testimony that is under oath, then this testimony can be used in court things, can be used in lawsuits, it can be used in prosecutions. And that that Democrat said, well, it isn't, the Democrat said something about, well, we're not going to be prosecuting anybody due to the outcome of this. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the only purpose this committee should exist for, is to make sure that some bad actors with that work for New Hampshire Health and Human Services and or DCYF or any state agency who are violating the rights of the people do get prosecuted.
That's technically the purpose for like almost all of those committees.
Right.
You know, it's supposedly they're there to protect the people.
Correct.
And they're supposed to be like an internal thing checking on how the government itself is working,
yep.
You know, and make sure that people's rights aren't being violated.
So Leah Cushman is being threatened that is being challenged. There'd be, the Speaker of the House or somebody, I could be misquoting what I'm saying here, but somebody above her or that reigns power over her in the legislature, which as far as I'm concerned, the only people that are above the, you know, Leah, for example, are her constituents, the people, not some, you know, somebody else in the legislature, like the Speaker of the House or, you know, the governor, whoever. She answers to the people. She doesn't answer to them. And she received a whole bunch of affidavits to investigate DCYF. I'm not sure. It could be hundreds of affidavits. In fact, there was a state representative who came in there to testify and said that when he went and door knocked and he asked people about their concerns, the most popular concern was DCYF.
Wow.
Which makes sense. Like when I walked around the Henniker campus a couple years ago to just kind of chat up some people, and I talked to them about DCYF, like every kid that I talked to at that, when I say Henniker campus, New England College, mm-hmm. like most of the students at New England College are like from New York City, mm-hmm. Baltimore, Hartford. At least when I was talking to them, hey, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Hartford. I'm from New York City. I'm from Baltimore. Couple guys from Chicago. What do you think of Child Protective Services? Oh, they're bad.
Wow.
You know, they're you know, and a lot of these inner city kids have got horrible, you know, things to say about Child Protective Services because they neither know someone has been victimized, someone in their family was victimized by them, or they themselves are victimized by them. So anyways, So the Democrats are looking to get this out of the way. And the thing is when you have people testify under oath, it is very, very powerful. And then their testimony under oath stands as the truth until it is rebutted.
Hmm.
And you only have a short time to rebut these testimonies. I mean, they're not saying that you, like when we do these affidavits that we're sending out to, you know, get these investigations going. And like we sent affidavits directly to, I believe her name is Lori Wheeler. I could be wrong about that name, but I think
that sounds like that's a rep. Yeah.
No, she is somebody in DCYF or Health and Human Services.
Yeah, that name sounds familiar. But yeah, okay.
But whatever. She was like, you know, so like Colin, you know, filled out one of these affidavits. You know, we've had a whole bunch of affidavit parties where a bunch of people filled out these affidavits, and they were addressed to her. She is I think the director of DCYF or something. And so, for example, she was told about these crimes at DCYF and has done nothing. But as we know, nothing's been done about DCYF because DCYF is quite literally a cash cow for the parasite class, for the people who work in government. You know, if you look at this Social Security Administration Title IV and you start looking into how much money through the Title IV program has been given to the states, it is like $500 million has been given, like, you know, to the 50 states from the Social Security Administration, and that money is incentive money to incentivize DCYF to basically take children to do assessments. And the other thing too that was about this hearing is there was a few people who testified that we called DCYF because this child was being neglected and abused, and nothing happened. Multiple people called DCYF. This child is being neglected and abused. Nothing happened. But at the same time, they're investigating families that, let's just say, for lack of a better description, families that are anti-narrative. So, like, for example, I just talked to a woman the other day on the phone. She's going to testify at the next committee where her 5-year-old son was taken from her for allowing the son to ride the bicycle up and down her driveway. Hmm. And her driveway is basically a Class 6 road. What is a Class 6 road in New Hampshire? A Class 6 road is a road that is not maintained by the town or the city or the state because it was basically a carriage path 100 years ago. And it's never, you know, they're not paved, they're not plowed. you know, by the city. It's basically their driveway. Mm-hmm. In fact, my driveway was a Class 6 road up until a few years ago. It's no longer a Class 6 road, but the so this woman's kid was eventually taken from her just over allowing a 5-year-old to ride his bicycle up and down her driveway. And this particular woman has some mentally ill libtard neighbors that reported her. So basically what we have going on with the weaponization of the government, you know, we had a caller, you know, call in the beginning of the show about Trump. So we have a weaponization of this, you know, government, you know, left versus right, essentially happening at federal, state, county, and local levels all over the country. And DCYF is a really powerful weapon of this radical left that they're using against conservative families. Because, you know, and if you look at the nature of the people that actually go to work in DCYF as social workers, you look at the culture of them people, the liberal left institutions that they have, you have to attend to get the credentials to become a social worker. And these are institutions that are funded by the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, the Ford Foundation, MacArthur. You know, just walk around any of these, institutions, and you're going to find these plaques and stuff on the walls. Not all of them are funded by, you know, the associations or whatever, the endowments that I mentioned. But we know that Jeffrey Epstein's friends are quite literally, you know, funding the education of the social workers. Another interesting thing is social workers in New Hampshire take a class called to maximize revenue for DCYF via Social Security Administration Title 4 A, B, C, D, whatever.
That's crazy. So, like, shouldn't the purpose be, shouldn't you know that your job, your purpose is to protect kids if you're becoming a DCYF worker?
Not when there's money involved.
They straight up know that it's right. Not that, so, and that it is to maximize profits.
And actually, a lot of the testimony that they talked about, like this one state representative and this other woman who testified at the very end of this committee, she was representing someone else who was actually trying to adopt her granddaughter because her daughter was a drug addict and was like, hey, mom, I got pregnant. I can't like do this baby. Will you take the baby? So there was like an agreement between the mom who's struggling with life to get the baby from the drug addict daughter. And everything was good. And the mom was like from out of state, Wisconsin or Michigan or something. And this lady actually who read this testimony was a former state representative. And DCYF was like, no, you can't do that because they didn't want to lose custody of the child because that child is a cash cow for this money coming from the federal government to keep the system funded. So they want their maximum foster kids. They want them in foster care because this is how they make their living. And this is how the social workers are essentially trained, you know, via this class, which actually I'd love for somebody to contact me that has actually taken this class. You can contact me at jay@jaynoone.com. That's jay@jaynoone.com. That's my email. If you have any information about, you know, this maximizing revenue for DCYF class that's been offered at Granite State University. So what's happening is the social workers are basically under, and this is a presumption I'm stating right now, but they're basically being taught that, like, we need to maximize revenue so you have a retirement fund. Because a lot of the things about the state, you know, employees is one of the biggest things is their golden parachute retirement funds that, you know, they're able to have because, you know, the state just points guns at taxpayers and make sure these retirement funds are well funded. So the next hearing. Oh, and the reason that these Democrats are freaking out about under oath is because when DCYF goes down, the judicial pension fund will probably collapse. And so the family courts aren't operating under due process of law at all whatsoever. In fact, none of the courts are operating under due process of law. If you go into this, listen to this committee, there's two young men that explain it really well. What due process of law is, what a court of law is, and a court of law exists without the statutes. As soon as a statutory anything is brought into a court, it is no longer a court of law. So, like, when you're charged for some kind of statute, you're not in a court of record, and a court of record is guaranteed to the people. So this is something else that's going to come out of these hearings that is going to be used for another committee to, and so we need to dissolve all of the circuit courts, all of the family courts, and the superior courts, because they're not courts of record. The only court of record is a Supreme Judicial Court, and that's who should be hearing all the stuff. And also, these statutes need to stop getting enforced on people who aren't government employees, because that's the only thing that these statutes belong to.
Yep.
So the next meeting is going to be March 25th at 9 a.m. at the State House. I don't know what room number, but a meeting to investigate DCYF. Colin, did you by any chance find that that description in that YouTube
video?
Is it
the legislative office building or the State House?
I don't know.
It just makes me wonder, who are these freaking Democrat people that would have a problem with this and instantly know, like, oh, we got to object to this?
They're either mentally ill or they're pedophiles.
Well, the state rep lady you mentioned, it's just like they are all in lockstep with this, and it's crazy. Like, are they in some kind of a secret meeting cults after hours, after they meet up for in their Congress or whatever? 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. More coming up. You control, and 603-283-6160 is the phone number. That's 603-283-6160. Are you tired of the oppressive rules and moderation of the big tech social media sites?
Yeah.
Our social Mastodon server, our Mastodon server at social.freetalklive.com can set you free. Mastodon is free, open source, decentralized, and federated. Multiple apps are available for iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, and Linux. Social.freetalklive.com. Sorry, you had something you wanted to say there, Colin?
Oh, no, I was just saying yes. Yes, I agree. Yeah.
You're tired of the big tech social media sites?
Absolutely.
And with you in the studio tonight, you've got me.
Oh, and Colin.
And Jay.
And Jay, you were telling us in the last segment about these NDCYF or investigate DCYF committee hearings. Is that what you're calling?
You
were calling them?
So here's the YouTube description, and I think Bonnie, you'll put it maybe on the Twitter page or something.
Yeah.
So if you go YouTube, House Special Committee on the Division for Children, Youth, and Families.
And so these special committees are different than the ones that hear about bills.
About. Right. It's a special committee. This is basically an investigation, and in parentheses they have 03-04-2024, which is the date. Now, this is on the New Hampshire, the NH House of Representatives Committee streaming channel, which has 3,000 subscribers. Anyways, so be sure to follow this. And I am going to be putting some stuff on my website, jnoon.com, about the next meeting, what room it's in, what building it's in. And I will also, there's like an email that they're setting up to email this committee. I don't know what that email is off the top of my head. In fact, if you want, go on this YouTube video and just skip to the end and listen to the last couple minutes. They do say what, there's an email. And also on my Twitter, which is JNoonManCamp, I will be putting some stuff there about it. And also you can, you know, find these op-eds that they're pushing against Leah. On Twitter, if you go to Leah Cushman, NH is her Twitter handle. And a good friend of ours, Ian Underwood, actually wrote a supporting op-ed that he sent to the union leader. But we'll see if the union leader will even publish it because, you know, they're corrupt, all, you know, best I can tell also.
Quick question. This committee, is it a new committee that they specifically created like in this session or?
Yeah, so this is a committee that was specifically created because state representatives started getting.
And it's a special committee too. Yeah, no, so that answers your question. They know, they've got some idea of what's.
So,
yeah.
So my question from the last segment where I was saying, how do these Democrats know, oh, we got to object to everything Leah Cushman does. It's like, how could you be against people telling the truth? And especially if they're not being coerced, because I would probably object to it too if it was coerced being put under oath, because I don't
they can't get that, you know, their supply of adrenochrome cut. It's really gonna do bad things for them.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's obviously there's something nefarious.
Truth is treason in a
empire of lies.
That's right. Thank you. Yes. Truth is treason in an empire of lies. So, you know, that, you know, this is what's going on here. And, you know, I'm sure Leah's on some kind of, you know, naughty list, because she's, you know, she's a mom, you know, she's got children and, you know, she's still with the husband, you know, she's got a really good, nice nuclear family. And, you know,
I think it's just because she's a free stater.
A free stater, because she's willing to challenge the corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be one of the first times in history that this kind of committee is actually happening, because you would never get this done in Massachusetts, California, or New York, because they have a legislative pension fund, because those legislators all get like a career paycheck. They make a career of being a legislator. To like New Hampshire, which is got 400 state reps, which is more state reps than the other 49 states put together. And they're not paid. They just get $100 a year stipend, which is basically not a pay. So there is no pension fund. And I'm not sure, you know, in Massachusetts or New York or California, how much, you know, Social Security Administration Title IV money, you know, the legislative pension fund gets. I know the judicial pension fund gets a lot. And 66% of whatever's collected in child support is given to the judge's pension fund. And so it is actually rules in these family court for California and Texas. And, you know, one state's a red state, one state's a blue state. But it is rules in family court. And all these family courts are federalized under the Child Adoption Protection Act that came in 1997 under Clinton. But there's a rule that they are to basically make child support rulings based on the financial benefits that the state will receive, and that is, you know, make whoever's earning the money pay to child support, basically. And it's not for, you know, the benefit of the kids. All of this is for the benefit of the parasite. The parasite calling itself Child Protection Services and Family Court, everything they do is for the benefit of them. It's just like the teachers' unions. You think the teachers' unions are doing anything to benefit the children? No, it's to benefit them. Well, their union.
People really don't understand like how the state creates these corporations, and that's really all these things are, and how that's actually in a way part of the government. But they could create any type of corporation they want. So there's like a municipal corporations, and so there's, you know, what's the one in Massachusetts? What's the police there?
If you internet search this, Massachusetts State Police are corporations. Washington Post. So what you're going to find is a Washington Post article where the Massachusetts ACLU sued the Massachusetts State Police, and the Massachusetts State Police said, we're not, you know, bound by the constitutions or the statutes that, you know, regulate government. They did a Freedom of Information Act request, and it was denied. And they went all the way to the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts with this Freedom of Information Act request. And the Supreme Judicial Court in Massachusetts stated that the Massachusetts State Police are made up of 52 law enforcement councils that are corporations. They are actually charities. It says it's right in a Wall Street Journal article or Washington Post, because they have a tax identification number that begins with, I think, 098 or something, which is an IRS designation as a charity. So the Supreme Court justice's opinion, they agreed with Jack Collins, who was the legal counsel for the Massachusetts State Police Association. I actually know this guy. I used to deliver him hay. In fact, I stayed at his place on Nantucket years ago, about 15 years ago. I got to know him a little bit. And he represented these guys, you know, state police. And he wrote basically the brief stating that they are no different than the American Heart and Lung Society or the American Cancer Society, because they are just a charity. So all these municipal corporations of the city of Keene, if you read the city of Keene charter, because it has a uniform commercial code charter, they are a municipal corporation, not a government.
What all corporations are, not to get too far off, but it does all tie in, is they are requests from the government for specific legal protections. and then you agree to abide by certain rules. So
those rules are all stated in the corporate charter.
Yes, yes. And then those are governed also by statutes. So statutes, again, don't apply to the actual people. They only apply to people who form corporations or, you know, get licenses and
officers
stuff like
of that. Officers of corporations and government and contractors. It's all. And people who contract with the government and contract with these corporations are the only ones that the statutory law applies to. Statutory code. It's not even law.
Yeah, it's not law. Yeah. And in some states, it's actually requires a different amount of votes in like the state assembly to pass law than it does to pass the statutes. Because the statutes, it's just essentially it's like internal rules, right? And so the generally the government has a lower burden for establishing what rules they want to. So like the actual the state house, they can have a dress code, and that's not a law. That's just a rule that's there that they make for themselves.
Right. It's easier for them to get through.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not applying to the people, so it doesn't need to have a higher, let's say, burden of proof.
So in the state of Maine statutory construction manual, a friend of mine has been living in Maine for a little while, and he's really studied this. It says that people are invited to the statute, basically the statutory code. People are invited, but persons are required to abide by the statutory code. It says something like that. I didn't quote it exactly, but also if you guys wanted to like learn some like stuff about these statutes and these corporations and even things discharging debt, the Curtis Stone, your urban farmer, who's a guy I met down in Anarchapulco, who actually did a really, really great presentation. If you're someone who is looking to buy property to like homestead, you should go to Curtis Stone's website and you should click on resources and send him a little message so he can get back to you. He has a really awesome service that he offers where he uses Google Maps to like check out your property and sort of tell you like where you should put your pastures, where you should put your retention pond, where you should build your house, where you should put your barn, like all this really cool stuff that has like really helped the homestead like operation out a lot. But anyways, Curtis Stone, your urban farmer on YouTube, he's been doing some really, really good videos since Anarchapulco because he hooked up with a lot of people at Anarchapulco. So he's been doing these basically Zoom calls where he has like six or seven guests and they talk about a lot of this like law stuff. And like I listened to a lot of Curtis Stone years ago when I was listening to like Robert Menard and Dean Clifford, the like Canadian Freeman Project guys, and they were talking all about this law and stuff. And I did a podcast with Curtis Stone and Tim Pichot, the Liberty advisor down there, and I didn't really realize like how much like of a journey of a similar journey Curtis Stone and I have been on, in our lives, to where I've been doing this, like this legal stuff since I was like in my teens.
Mm-hmm.
And then got a homestead and now raising a family. He's been raising a family a little longer than I have, but and homesteading a little longer than I have. But it was pretty interesting. So yeah, check him out if you want to learn more sort of about, some of the stuff we've been talking about, which is government just just a name on a piece of paper.
I'd kind of like to make some points to anybody who's listening, because there might be some people who are listening and they wonder some things throughout their life, like, well, if Congress shall pass no law, infringing on gun rights and stuff like that, then how is it that there's such a thing as the
NFPA?
Yeah, the National Firearms Act, and the Hughes NFA, Amendment, and all of these other things. And, well, it turns out that those are, again, internal rules for the government that they've, and then you at some point in your life identify as part of that by filling out paperwork in a certain way and claiming that you're part of that system.
Claiming you're a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, exactly.
A citizen, which is a citizen of the District of Columbia.
Yeah, which no such thing existed prior to the 14th Amendment.
Right.
Yeah. But another example of that is like the mask mandates here. The governor issued an executive order. Well, those orders only apply to within the government. It's like if you have
to the executive division.
Yeah, exactly. It's like if you have a company and you issue an order to your company, it doesn't apply to anybody else, right?
Right. If Walmart issues an order, it doesn't apply to customers that walk into Walmart. It only applies to the people who work for Walmart. Yeah.
What's weird is though, the people enforcing it at the front of the courts don't understand this, because Joa, former host on the show, he was standing outside where I was. I was not being allowed into the beginning of Ian's trial because I actually literally just lost my ID. And Joa was refusing to ID. And he found the rules. It was actually on their wall that they were trying to use to enforce to tell us we couldn't come in without IDs. And it specifically said that federal employees, it applied to federal employees. And he was pointing that out and they were like, listen, we're done talking to you. They just didn't care.
Well, when they do that kind of stuff, they put themselves into a position where they could be sued.
And here's the thing. Technically, so if you did a Freedom of Information Act on yourself, request on yourself with the IRS, the IRS quite likely has you labeled as a federal employee. So if you've ever filled out any employee documents, the only way that you can be so anyone who is a quote-unquote employee is only federal employees. There's no such thing as a non-federal employee. So if you go work for somebody where you fill out these tax forms, for example, you are technically a federal employee. So that would essentially apply. And all U.S. citizens are technically federal employees. In fact, there's a Supreme Court ruling from 1976. It's called Fox Steel versus Wheeling Company or something like that, where they state that all U.S. citizens are property of the federal government.
Wow.
Yeah. And what you're doing is you're essentially impersonating a U.S. citizen when you check off that you're a U.S. citizen on any of these documents, unless you attach a firm statement, you know, an affidavit essentially with the document explaining what, you know, definition of U.S. citizen you're using, because there's according to the Supreme Court, there's three different definitions of a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate again. So to anybody who's listening who's a conservative or libertarian and they've studied the Constitution their whole life, they're like, well, there's all these things that they do that are violating it. You're going to find out that they actually aren't really violating the Constitution. People have agreed to be part of those systems and agreed to follow those rules. Just like if you join the military, right, you sign a contract with them. And then guess what? Now you don't have freedom of speech when you're in the military. They can regulate your speech and all sorts of other things. But you agreed to it. And that's, you know, the thing. Just like if you were to work at a company, let's say I had a company and you came in, or business, maybe that's a better word, is business. But if you worked for me, I could say, hey, don't say these things in front of the customers. And then I could fire you for that. I could fire you for any reason, you know. But that's how this other stuff works.
Couldn't you not fire me for any reason in New Hampshire because it's not a right to work state?
That all that stuff is probably related to if you have an LLC. It's like with barbers and things like that. That's an official title that you get, like as a barber or as a doctor or as a lawyer, and you get licenses for those things. But you can cut anybody's hair and they can give you money. You can drive anybody and they can give you cash.
Okay, I didn't know you were saying unlicensed business.
Yeah. Anybody is free to do anything for anybody else. But when you go to the government, you say I want to have these this liability removed. Then you're saying in a way like, I'm going to follow extra rules.
Yeah, it still doesn't work out that way every single time, though, because like my husband was not free to sell Bitcoin to people without a license because he never signed up to become, like you said, well, he has to become a church. Well, he never became a 501c3 church that implies those rules on him.
I mean, I don't know each and every little detail of that case, but I do know that like, people went to the banks and filled out documents with the banks.
And checked off that they were United States citizens.
Or other things like that, or used certain types of IDs to do it.
Yeah, but like the people that run churches are usually filling out their own personal taxes. It just shouldn't apply to the church.
Yeah, I don't really have an answer.
They
didn't go after the church. They went after Ian.
Yeah, but they were saying that Ian was running a business and that it wasn't him operating a church. And then...
They didn't have to
prove that.
But like one of the biggest concerns is that, you know, with me in any of these cases, when they come against you, is that you're, by just exercising the status of being a U.S. citizen, even though you're doing it unknowingly, you're accepting a benefit from the state, even though it's unknowingly. And this is the way the state looks at it. And this is why, like, Christopher Gronski is, you know, very much into, like, you know, educating people on not to be in the federal zone, as he refers to it, you know, this jurisdictional traps. Like, this is why when, you know, you get a driver's license, you should attach a statement with your driver's license, like the one that I like that is like, hey, I'm doing this as a mere convenience, because if I don't have a driver's license, I'll be arrested, harassed, or possibly murdered, and, you know, or whatever. And, you know, and also please note that I'm not a 14th Amendment federal citizen. I am a, you know, citizen of this state or whatever you want to claim, or, you know, I am not a resident of the state. You know, a resident is a foreigner out of the District of Columbia. Destinations Freedom, is it .org?
I think it's Destination Freedom.
Destination Freedom. Actually, Jeff Berwick just did a video, his latest video on vigilante.tv. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Is
or just, you could Google dollar vigilante and you know, you'll find
it. Jeff Berwick just did a pretty good video interviewing Christopher Gronsky that covers like a lot of this, you know.
Yeah, and those videos are on Rumble, I believe, as well as Library and Odyssey and everything. Yeah.
Everything but YouTube and Facebook.
Yeah. And Christopher Gronsky, it is destinationfreedom.org.
Yeah. And he was at Anarchapoco also. That Anarchapoco was just like such a great thing. And if you, I recommend that you guys go on anarchapoco.com and buy the replays and watch my presentation and all the other presentations. My presentation, if you want to skip right to it, is at the end of day 4, part 1. So the replays are like, each clip is like 4 hours long.
Which
is a little annoying. But
I didn't quite want to say it on the air, but I need to reach out to somebody there and tell them that they need to break it up and make it to where the videos are smaller and portioned out.
But
Wait, I'm saying it now. So if somebody else can do that, and I don't have to.
But but anyways, and that's a lot of work to like do that stuff and get it done.
They can just offer a bounty. They can just offer a bounty, you know, crypto, sure, and somebody will do it. Yeah.
If you go to anarchapoco.com and you use my coupon code J. That helps me out. You save 10% and I'll get 10%. It's a way you can support me and, you know, what I'm doing. And if also you would like to support me and what I'm doing, go to my website, j@jnoon.com. There are some cryptocurrency codes there where you can, you know, throw me a little crypto if you like, you know, what I'm about and what I'm doing. That would certainly help, because I really want to push my message of investing in our posterity a lot harder in the future.
Nice. Well, I'm not trying to say that you guys are wrong or something. It's not like I'm disagreeing. Like, you're probably right that that's how it's written, that's how it's supposed to work and stuff. It's just that when they have no other recourse, they're like, okay, well, we're just going to tell a jury you're a bad person and you're going to go to jail anyway.
You know, and I mean, definitely, the system, in order for it to work, needs it to look believable to the average person. So they need to kind of like have some sort of laws and things like that when they go after people, and to where people are like, oh, well, of course he was breaking the law right here, and, you know, whatever. But, you know, they will actually just, you know, go after you with what do I want to say, you know, like underground things, you know, the deep state, they could just mafia you and, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is a thing. Like, they will, if they need to do it, they're going to do it. But if they could do it and make it look like you were violating the system in some way, then they're going to do that. And they're going to try to do that first, because then everything just looks like it's, you know, legitimate.
I mean, they cherry picked the jury, so there's that route. But
and they always
do. Yeah. But
because who selects whoever is available for jury, you know, it's not random. You know, it's going to be a bunch of bootlickers, you know, that they get, you know, in the jury pool. And the people who show up to jury service are people who are too dumb to get out of jury duty.
Yeah.
You know, those are the people who end up serving on a jury. Every once in a while, you might get someone who got, you know, a window fully formed, you know, jury association, the FEJA stuff there. And they just sort of keep their mouth shut so they can get on a jury. I mean, if you are a libertarian or you believe in freedom or you understand government's corrupt, you should do your best to get on a jury if you can get on a jury. But they're really good about screening them out, especially in Arizona. To get on the stuff my mom and questions they wanted her to fill out, they wanted to know if she watched like certain like news media, conservative news media. Mm-hmm. They had all kinds of like real personal questions they wanted her to fill up, put in a jury intake form, which was pretty crazy. She was really upset about it, and she ended up not getting on a jury because she filled it out fairly honestly. She figured if she lied, you know, or put left things out, that, you know, she would be put in jail or something, you know.
Yeah. And I don't blame people for thinking that. I also don't blame people for, you know, if they have to make money that day, not wanting to go get paid $10.
Well, some of these jury trials could, you know, take like these January 6th trials. the juries are going to go on for, you know, weeks. And only people that can possibly afford to, like, be on a jury duty for weeks are they, them, and those who are parasite class members, because the state's going to pay them for their job or the financial institution.
Oh, and one more thing about Ian's trial. Whenever they, so you have like 16 jurors that were there the whole time, and then they have to throw out however many that are more than the amount they really need. I can't remember how many that is.
Alternative jurors, yep.
So yeah, they're people who are there for in case like somebody dies, then you know, you don't have to redo the whole trial because you have some extras. So people that got thrown out, usually they do something like, it's not drawing numbers from a hat, but usually they do something else. But during Ian's trial, the judge was like, does anyone object to me using a randomized number generator on my phone? And no one objected, and I was like, what? And then he didn't have to show his phone. He was just like, it says 16. It says juror 1. I was like so annoyed in that moment. I was like, how do we know he didn't just already
select how come Ian's lawyer didn't object?
Oh, I don't know.
He's a lawyer, so he's a criminal too. It's part of the system.
Free Talk Live. You can find more at freetalklive.com. Thanks for listening, and peace.
You want to move to the free state, and you're looking for some real estate. Well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the realtor, Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations, and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.